I think they like you, Steve.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
To go. 610 here on 720 WGN. Steve Cochran Show with you this morning. Justin Kaufman, Dave Innitt, Mary Sandberg, Mary Vandeveld, Steve Grzanich. Steve Cochran will be back tomorrow on the program. Looking forward to hearing all about New York, his trip to New York.
Anyone family. Heard from him?
Mary did, right?
I did. I heard from him, and I saw cute pictures of Abigail, so hey, I know it was a good time.
Ooh, I saw those, yeah.
And I think I saw he tweeted that word on the street, a lot of talk about Giuliani. That's what I saw on Steve's Twitter.
I know when
yesterday.
I go to New York City, I always like to listen in, and when I'm in Soho, see what the kids are talking about.
Yeah, so Giuliani is the
one.
It's
Giuliani, huh?
Yeah.
It's so funny because, you know, I have some friends in New York. We go visit them all the time, and when we're there, their take on Trump and Giuliani is so intriguing to me because they've lived it for years. For decades, they've lived the Trump experience.
Sure.
We're just getting it the first 4 years or so, but they lived it. So, anyway. Great show lined up today. I'm excited to be back here. Money, if you're driving in or getting to work, if you're maybe just getting up, maybe getting home, whatever it is, we got you this morning here.
You could be.
Could be getting
shifter.
Home. Yeah, exactly. Or maybe just...
I saw some people on my ride in this morning who were just... heading home. But they were walking out of the
I will
bar.
Say this. It's very interesting. Doma Tipongo, who is our news guy, who you know, he's on this program a lot, and he's in WGN Newsroom. I've seen him now two mornings in a row at like 5 o'clock in the morning on Halsted. Right at Halsted and Madison. I'm coming in to work. And I'll be at that stoplight. And the second day in a row is Friday and today. He's getting out of his car, and I'm like, hey, what's up? I'm like, we're the only two people out here, and he's working on the jam. He's at WCIU, so he does the morning. But yeah, it's sort of like, Domati, hey.
Right. The chances of the only two people
only
on the street knowing each other.
Seeing each other two days in a row.
We'll wait till the end of the week with Lollapalooza. We'll be seeing people at this hour.
That's true. That's true. Coming out of the after parties.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we got a great show lined up. Doc Most will join us a little bit later in the show. We'll talk medical marijuana this hour. Ryan Nobles, of course, everything that's happening in Washington with the Trump administration. Heather Sharone's going to join us to talk about police reform, big thing that came out with the consent decree and police reform late Friday. So we'll talk about that. And also the Chicago Accent Challenge, one of my favorite segments. If you think you got a good Chicago accent, we have a challenge for you. You can win a pizza today and be entered into the grand prize challenge tournament style, which will be later in the year, and the grand prize is $333. 312-981-7200. If you think you got a good accent, we're doing that in the 9 o'clock hour.
I'm looking forward to that one.
What do we have? So how was the weekend, Dave? You went to the convention, right?
I was there Friday for the opening ceremony, and it was great. It was great to see everybody, and as always, a lot of Blackhawks fans excited about a season that's not all that far away.
I know.
And, there were some cool moments. I thought Chris Chelios being introduced as an ambassador.
How was the response?
It was good. He got a good reception. I mean, people were wondering, would he get booed a little bit because of the Detroit days?
Right.
But I think the cheers easily drowned out the boos.
The video lead up to that, I was listening to you guys, it got me so excited as a person who's always had a crush on Chris Chelios. I was like, couldn't get enough of that. I thought the loudest cheer, Dave, I don't know if you could disagree, was Patrick Sharp. I feel got the loudest. The ladies always, you know, cheer for.
But this
Patrick
was this
Clark.
Was ladies and
ladies
the
and
guys.
Guys. It was overwhelming.
Yeah, he got a huge ovation. A little hard to tell which one was loudest. Corey Crawford got
Corey
a big welcome. It was a good weekend. The convention went well. I had a wedding on Saturday, I spent a lot of my weekend in that traffic. Between Racine and Milwaukee.
Oh, that's
and anyone
fun.
Who was stuck in that this weekend, I think, can relate.
Is it construction?
Construction, yeah.
Speaking of crushes, you got to go see one of your crushes on, was it Saturday? Kenny Chesney.
Yeah, at Soldier Field. I got to see, it was Old Dominion, Brandon Lay, Old Dominion, Thomas Rhett and Kenny Chesney. And because I know some really nice people who make amazing things happen for me, I got to actually meet Kenny Chesney.
What?
I did.
How about that? Was he wearing his hat, his cowboy hat?
He was wearing a baseball hat. That's what he always does.
Oh, he doesn't do cowboy hat.
No, he did. Yeah, no, not really. And I've been in love with Kenny Chesney since about 1995. And I've had one of those pretend marriages in my head. And, you know, in 2000...
Like me and Mariah
even
Carey?
Though I'm married and I'm very happy and I have the most amazing husband, I still have, you know, when in 2005 when he and Renee Zellweger were married for about 2 weeks,
yeah, right.
I thought, well, that's because it's supposed to be me.
It's supposed to be me. That's why this is not working out.
I like the boat life, you know, because he's like Jimmy Buffett. He lives on a boat. And anyways, so
what do you think his head looks like without that hat?
Mayor, it's got to be tiny is all
yeah.
I can think.
Well, he's a little person, isn't he?
I know. Oh. So I knew he was small. You know, I knew he was small. And I'm 5'6" and normal sized. And so we went to the meet and greet. And when I was next to him, he could never be my husband. He was so slight. Like my hand on the back of his, you know, the small of his back when you put your arm around for a photo. It's the width of my hand, his whole, from
really
edge to waist,
he's
edge to waist.
A small guy.
How tall is he? He's a little person.
He might be 5 feet. Or 5'1".
Oh, come on. He's not.
But don't you think every show, and I saw him, I think, a couple of years ago in Milwaukee at Miller Park. He does a great show.
Oh.
But every show for him is like a marathon.
I know.
That's why he has to be so small.
That's why he's got no weight on.
Because he's really ripped, and I know.
Mm-hmm. Mary, he's 5'6".
He's 5'6".
He's 5'6". He was shorter than me. I was in flats.
What?
And he
really?
Was shorter than me. Yeah. The picture hasn't posted.
They always list the wrong height, though.
They do. But yeah. I would say he's 5'3", then, if he said 5'6", or 5'2".
Well, maybe it's a body mass index thing, where you're right. He sweats so much in these shows that he has to be a small guy.
And I think that he does not use sunscreen. So
the crush, is the crush ruined? Is the dream deferred?
It is.
Oh, no.
I still love him, but we could never. I'm going to have to.
Okay, so you're going to scratch that off.
That's interesting. Yeah. Maybe that should be our text question today. Which, if you have had an opportunity to interact with a celebrity crush, has it changed your thought? Has it changed your perception of what you thought you could be with a celebrity? How about that? 312-981-7200.
So yours is Mariah Carey?
I haven't met Mariah Carey. If I met Mariah Carey and she was way too tall, I don't know what it would be.
Ask Steve.
Yeah,
met her.
He's met her?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, he's got a story about her.
Oh. It's always been my dream to not necessarily be with Mariah Carey, but to be in a Mariah Carey video. I wanted to be the comic relief in a Mariah Carey video. I think that'd be great. That was my... All right, top 6 of 6 coming up.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks.
With the top 6 of 6. Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
All right, time for the top 6 of 6 here on the 720 WGN, the Cochran Show. Justin Kaufman here. The president hinted that he'd be willing to shut down the government if he doesn't get his way when it comes to immigration reform. The showdown would be in September, which is very close to the midterm election. Republican leaders aren't sure on that game of Russian roulette. See what I did there? Since shutdowns are very unpopular, and it's a coin flip on which party would get the blame. This sounds like something Trump loves. He loves to take chaos to the brink. And this would be something he would love to do because he loves the odds. He's a casino owner. He loves the 50-50 odds. Those are great odds.
Do you think that other presidents use this? They just didn't put it out in public?
I think so. You try to question and look at this president differently because of the way that he acts in public. Because, yes, there's no doubt. Government shutdowns go as far back. I remember President Clinton was famous for government shutdowns with the Republican Congress at that time. Obama had a couple of run-ins, dealing with all the shutdowns and the Republican Congress at that time. So I just feel like it's that's what they do. I mean, it just seems to be normal politics. But the president makes it seem like it's so outlandish. We're talking about government shutdowns. A month and a half before they're going to happen.
And Mary, I think the caveat there is Republican presidents don't do this.
Okay.
This is not something that a Republican president
That's what they usually run on, right? They run on this sort of fiscal efficiency.
Keep the government
efficiency,
running, fiscal efficiency. Yeah, concern.
Yeah.
Okay.
President Trump continued his war on the media yesterday, saying in a tweet that the anti-Trump coverage outweighs his administration's accomplishments, even when good news is happening, even calling out the media as unpatriotic for covering government affairs. Oh. I mean, I think there's some merit. I will give the president some credit. You know, the news that has come out in the last week about the strong economy, even the tariffs working for some parts of American industry, the steel industry, that story has been buried because it seems more and more you see the media going with caveats. But I also would push back on the president saying that's no different than the last president. The last president, if the last president got good economic numbers, maybe a jobs report, I know this from having, we would have conversations on the radio where the person would say, yeah, but that's because the unemployment numbers are actually dropping because people can't, they just stop looking for work. That used to be the actual reasoning beyond why the unemployment number was dropping. Now that has not been brought up, the idea of people leaving the job force or deciding it's just too hard to find a job. So my point being that it does feel like he might be, you know, sort of wah, 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 you know, about something that happens to every single president.
Well, that's news coverage in general.
Right.
That's not specific to him.
Right.
Right now, we tend to hear more of the worst things happening than the when the sensationalized things than the actual good normal.
Yeah, and if you're talking about the GDP coverage,
right?
You can't say that you have the best GDP numbers in history and expect to have fair coverage on
when you don't have the best
GDP numbers in history.
I agree. I am with you on that because I also feel like there's something in human nature and maybe even just American society where when you have someone who is so driven by ego, I'm the best, this is the best, the likes of which you've never seen, that never is actually accepted. There's always going to be people that try to knock that down. So maybe if the communication was different and you let the merits of your work speak for itself as opposed to you getting up in front and speaking like it's the best thing that's ever happened to anybody who's ever lived ever, then maybe we would have a different scenario.
Yeah, because, I mean, in that case, he gets the credit for that.
Right,
the economy's
exactly.
doing really well.
The classic Friday night news drop. Many have missed that the mayor and the state attorney general have put forth a proposal for federal oversight of Chicago police. This is interesting. The consent decree would put a judge in charge of whether or not the police department met certain benchmarks to improve regulations, training, and community relations. Mayoral opponent Lori Lightfoot is already out in front saying the mayor had to be dragged into this plan by Lisa Madigan, so give credit where credit is due. Madigan sued the city previously to force them to take action after the Justice Department's report in 2016. Very interesting story. We're going to talk with Heather Sharone coming up here in the 8 o'clock hour about that. In local mayoral news, Cook County Board Commissioner and frequent guest of this program, Bridget Gaynor, announced Saturday that she is not running for mayor of Chicago. There was a lot of speculation saying because of the money that she had in her campaign chest that she was going to jump into the race for mayor, but she came out and said she's not. She said she could better help the city and the area in other ways.
Yeah, from the outside, she said, than the inside. Yeah. So
no Bridget Gaynor. So that's actually a huge win for the mayor, the incumbent, because Bridget Gaynor, who represents Lakeview and other places, would have taken a chunk out of an area that has been pro-Emanuel for years. So that's a big win for Mayor Emanuel that he preserves. There's no other candidates that are really vying for that same up the gut Chicago, up the north side of Chicago voting role. So
it is unfortunate though because she's a very strong female candidate.
Yes.
And it would have been she's the one that they said actually gave him a run for his money.
Yeah.
So it would have been
cool. She definitely would have given a run for the money in his constituency or his strength when it comes to who's voting for him. All right, this weekend, get ready for basketball jerseys and high hip jean shorts and roller skates or whatever these kids are wearing. And get ready to take over your Metro train. It's Lollapalooza time. Officials say they're tightening security after it was revealed that the Las Vegas shooter had also checked out a room in a neighboring Grand Park Hotel last year. So security to the festival and the surrounding area is being beefed up. Have you been to Lollapalooza? Have you been to Michigan Avenue during Lollapalooza?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you go down there maybe like a 7 o'clock on a Saturday night. It is like the fall of Saigon. Or to give it to someone who did not live through the fall of Saigon, everyone trying to get off Jurassic Island.
I lived in Michigan and Madison for a few years, and watching the exodus, if it's at 11 o'clock or 10 o'clock, you know, when they all leave, a lot of kids that can't walk holding their shoes.
I was blown away. Last year was the first time I had gone to Lollapalooza as a dad. I took Miles to go to the kids' stage, and we did for one day. So we went in probably around 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I was I'm a guy who check your sixes, watch on the other side of the street. You know, I'm always kind of walk fast. My dad taught me to walk fast in the city. So I've got miles on, hey, double time, let's go. And I mean, the sort of danger, like, alert when you're coming into Lollapalooza is on high. I mean, my brain was like an overload because there's just so many things happening. There's so many people out there trying to scam you. There's a lot of people around the entrance and different areas that you're like, whoa, that's not that. People trying to sell. They're walking up to you. They're trying to give. It was an amazing amount of anxiety for a dad.
Don't you think if you weren't with Miles, if you're by yourself, you're with your wife, you would have a different vibe?
Absolutely. I'm sure most people that walk in there are not fazed by it.
Was Miles fazed by it?
He didn't care. No.
Miles? Have you met Miles?
Yeah, no. As we learned on Friday, his highlight was getting his hair colored red and silver. Exactly.
How are you going to match that this year?
Exactly. So. The holdout continues for Bears rookie Roquan Smith, although now we have some details on what the holdup's all about. It's not money, according to head coach Matt Nagy. It's more about helmets. The NFL is promising to get strict about the helmet-to-helmet rule and will up the ejections next year, and ejections lead to suspensions. And in the current contract, suspensions mean they could take away guaranteed money.
So it is about money.
Yeah, it is.
It is about money, but it's about the language.
That's interesting.
And trying to figure it out and probably setting a precedent here.
And that's what the Bears are trying to hold out. They don't want to set precedent that this would be for the future of how they sign players.
Look, they're hoping Roquan Smith is going to make tons of tackles for him, but occasionally those tackles there may be helmet-to-helmet contact involved. How are they going to call this new rule? That's what people don't know. And what's the league going to do if a player is called for an infraction, and what's the suspension going to be like? And there's a lot of confusion about this.
You know what? It makes me more sympathetic to the player than I did maybe a week ago. I thought it was all about money. It is still about money. But
it's about money, but it's
about a contract and them catching up their language to what the NFL wants to do with the rules. And I think that the Bears have to figure this out, not Roquan Smith. That's my thought right now. Obviously, he doesn't want to take money where the Bears... And you know this will happen. You cannot trust an organization to be like, you know, the minute he gets suspended and maybe he's not liked by it, maybe it's his fourth hit and everyone's like, you could totally see them being like, you know, we just are going to walk away from this and get their money back. So I think he has to figure that out because, let's just face it, football is a violent sport and sometimes... As you know, Dave, tough to control where you're tackling somebody and your head is at.
And it's kind of uncharted territory. That's the problem as far as how this rule is going to be enforced.
And the first game is Thursday night. Okay, and lastly, a new study published today says even the mildest form of dehydration can affect your mental health. That gives new meaning to the phrase watered down. I guess we got to switch that. If you're watered down, you're actually stronger. So I think all that time I was watering down the liquor bottles... My parents was actually helping them.
You were helping them hydrate.
Helping their mental state. How about that?
Okay.
Is that right? I think the math is right on that?
Yeah.
All right, the math is right.
That's it!
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
He's Northwestern Medicine VP. Call Dr. Morse right now.
Cochran Show here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, Mary Sandberg, Dave Ennett, Steve Grzanich, Mary Vandeville here. Steve Cochran back tomorrow on the program. I've had that song stuck in my head for at least a week, Doc. I don't know what it is. I found myself humming Doc Most. And my son is like, what song is that? I'm like, I'm not sure what song it is, but I listen to it every Monday. But Doc Most joins us. He is sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. Medical marijuana on the subject today. Oklahoma last week became the 30th state to approve the use of medical marijuana. This is fascinating because, of course, marijuana in general has become such almost positive if you think about the way that people look at this drug. I think it's 60-65% of the country has changed their point of view on marijuana. And medical marijuana is obviously becoming a huge alternative for opioids and other pain medications. Where are we with medical marijuana? Why don't we start with the fact that this is the 30th state to approve medical marijuana. This seems like this is going to be approved in 50 states, correct?
You would certainly hope, Justin, because there's been enough, whether anecdotal or whether the studies have shown that there is definitely a place for medical marijuana in the country and in the state. So, you know, 30 states have them, but each state's a little different. Illinois has a fairly extensive list of medical conditions that can be treated with medical marijuana. Other states are a little bit tighter with which can be treated. Other states are a little bit looser as far as possession and things. So you would hope that after 30 states, it's kind of hitting a tipping point, and we need to look at it from a federal point of view now versus just a state.
Well, the U.S. Attorney General has come out and said that's probably not going to happen under his watch. But I'm intrigued by medical marijuana because this has been almost a way for marijuana to be brought into the mainstream, almost like a loophole. Because even there are some that have, of course, the states out west have approved recreational marijuana use, but legal to make it legal. But for medical marijuana, this is something that more and more states are approving because they're seeing what possibly could be the attributes of this, of marijuana.
Absolutely. You know, we already know that there's, you know, a couple main chemicals in marijuana, THC and CBD, that we know they work to a point where we have medications based on that. So we know that the effect is there and we know that it works. We just haven't gotten to the point of it not being to the FDA saying we will approve it. So, you know, when I look at what uses it can be used for and some of the stories that you hear, it's definitely something we need to move on.
So are there, I know, other medicines in our lives that we take now, you know, 40 years ago it was for something else, and then it was something we started using, and we just don't know that anymore because it's happened too long ago. Marijuana has a bad rap because people use it recreationally, but opioids people are using recreationally as well. You know, like they're not, but it has this hanging over it that people are going to all become addicted to it if they start using it. Do they have studies showing that it doesn't lead to this if you've been given this for a treatment for cancer or, you know, when you're going through chemotherapy or for PTSD, that you then, it's a gateway drug to all of a sudden you're going to start doing other drugs?
Yeah, that's a great question because, you know, when we look at addictive properties, people enjoy the use of marijuana, but they don't, quote unquote, get addicted to it. So they don't have to rush and have that all the time. They're not chasing that high. And you make a really good point about the gateway portion of it. A lot of people and a lot of studies have shown that the gateway study of it is actually through the drug supplier. So, you know, you're going to a drug dealer and he's like saying, hey, you know, you like this marijuana, I want you to try this. And now they're lacing the marijuana with something else to make it more potent. Yeah. So a lot of people feel that the gateway portion of it is I'm getting exposed now to cocaine, to heroin, to opiates by someone who can get them to me very easily versus it's just going to be a drug that, boy, once I get tired with marijuana, I'm going to move on to cocaine. So there's a lot of argument there as far as it being a gateway drug.
For the medical community, and I would ask for, you know, for you personally, I'm intrigued by how your approach to marijuana has changed, because I would think that even 10 years ago, 20 years ago, the stigma and, of course, all of the information around it was pointing the medical community in a different direction. What do you think it is that moved the community towards this being a legal and a positive drug?
Well, you know, I think when you finally get down to scientists studying the drug itself, it gets away from the social portion of it, and now there's science behind it, which is what we really need more of. We need some big studies to do this because we've had studies on mice, we've had studies on other, you know, rats, but what we really need is we need some really big, large studies on people with specific medical conditions. If you can show me a large study that shows that, boy, this works better for patients with something as simple as arthritis, I'm going to say, wait a second. Marijuana will be less expensive than some of the arthritis medications we take, and it'd be less toxic. Some of the arthritis medicines we take are very toxic. So, you know, you have to do that balancing act of, is it going to be as effective, and what's the cost of it? So when you look at those two things, I think you're going to start to see that medical marijuana is going to play a big role in some some conditions.
Let's talk specifically about what medical marijuana can do for certain illnesses. Dr. Kevin Most on the line right now. Our segment each week on Monday, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. We'll take a quick break, come back with Doc Most. Dr. Kevin Most with us on the line, as he is every Mondays here, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. We're talking medical marijuana this morning on the Cochran Show. As the 30th state to approve medical marijuana, Oklahoma did so last week. It's interesting because this is becoming a cottage industry. Obviously, the regulation will put some drug dealers out of business, but the regulation is also creating small businesses galore who want to get into the medical marijuana business. You know, when you talk about medical marijuana as an industry, you know, is it a good thing, obviously, that more and more dispensaries and other people want to get involved in this? Or do you start to, you know, have the same problem you have with opioids where, you know, everybody wants in, so there's issues with the price and how it kind of plays out?
No, I think, you know, the nice thing about having dispensaries is it's much more controlled than it is the marijuana on the street. So we know what's in there. We know how strong it is. And that's probably the biggest thing, is to have some control over that. For opiates, we know that they're out there and they're getting through the process of being produced properly. It's a matter of we're using them in higher doses than we should use them. So it really, it's a quality control right now that as these states get improve medical marijuana, you're starting to have quality control in what I'll call the product, and it's going to be much safer for those individuals.
Is there an issue, Dr. Most, is there an issue with overdoing prescriptions or over-consuming marijuana the same way that there would be an issue of people taking too high of a dose of opiates?
No. There's never been a dose. There's never been a death from an overdose of marijuana, believe it or not.
Wow.
So, you know, pharmaceutical companies do a lot of research, and then they have get insurance for, you know, if something goes bad on medicine you take. So the cost is really high on that. Is marijuana going to, those dispensaries and the people that are, I guess, producing it or growing it or whatever, are they going to have, like, are we going to see an increase with the demand higher in the cost of it?
Well, that'll be interesting because, you know, one of the things with marijuana is you have your sense of judgment sometimes, and inhibitions are a little bit decreased, I'll say. So are they going to be responsible then for the actions of that individual? That would be the only thing, because the rest of it really has shown to be it being somewhat safe, much safer than opioids, I'll tell you, much safer than some of the arthritis medications that we take. So it would be interesting to see how the insurance companies are going to rate these drug companies.
They just need to put that little sticker outside the packaging that says, don't take this and drive, just like your regular pain
it's
medication.
On you. Yep. That's all I was going to say. Right? This is still
don't
on you.
Drink and take this, you know, those warnings.
Doc, I'm intrigued on where you're seeing medical marijuana used most, because we know glaucoma, that has been something that has been the butt of many jokes about the idea of I have eye problems, give me marijuana. But where are you seeing medical marijuana used? Is it cancer? Is it, as you mentioned, arthritis? Where do you see it having the most impact?
Yeah, two quick things. One about glaucoma, because it is very interesting, right? People say, oh, you know, it's great for glaucoma, and yeah, it is great for glaucoma, but we have to realize that really the effect of that only lasts for about 4 or 5 hours. So in order for it to really get the effect for all of glaucoma, you have to use it regularly. So that's the people that are pushing back saying, oh, it really doesn't work for glaucoma. And I'll say, well, the medicines that we take for glaucoma, you have to take 4 times a day anyways as well. So it kind of balances. But you hit it on the head. The biggest thing is for cancer patients right now. If I had a drug that could eliminate nausea and stimulate someone's appetite, that is what I want for those patients taking chemotherapy. Chemotherapy, you're nauseated the entire time. You feel terrible. You have no appetite whatsoever. So here we are. We're trying to keep you as strong as we can as we give you this toxic drug to fight cancer, and yet you can't take the caloric intake because you just feel terrible. So that's probably the biggest one right now. And you'll see that. You'll see oncologists saying, hey, you need to take this because this is what's going to help you get through the chemotherapy.
So there's a texter from the 847 that's asking about CBD oil. And I know, not to say that dogs are the same as people, or in your world, if you're listening, if dogs are the same as people, you can take it that way. My sister's dog has thyroid cancer, and they're going the treatment of CBD oil. And it has helped him immensely in his diet and wanting, because they need him to eat this anti-cancer diet. And, you know, so that's been really effective. How about for humans?
Yeah, and that's the other interesting thing. You know, there's a lot of cannabinoids in marijuana, but the two main ones are THC and CBD. The very interesting thing is that for seizure control, for the anti-inflammatory, for the pain portion of it, it's the CBD portion that actually works the best. Now, I'll tell you the argument is that the THC portion is the portion that gets you high. So if we're saying, wait a second, this medicine's going to make us high, it really isn't, because the CBD portion of it in higher is the one that's going to stop the seizures. You probably heard of Charlotte's Web. You know, that's the one that is going to be, that's the portion of it that's going to work the highest. With the genetic modification you can make on plants right now, growing a marijuana plant that is high in CBD and lower in THC, you'll still get that high feeling, I'll say, but you're going to get the medicinal benefits of the CBD, which is the pain management portion of it, the seizure control, and some work in the brain as well.
That's so interesting, too, because I think that there's, obviously this all goes back to stigma and it goes back to perceptions, because there's this perception with medical marijuana that you're prescribing medical marijuana and you get a bag of, you know, leafy weed and you're rolling joints and you're getting high and smoking out your neighbors. That's not necessarily the case. Especially with the new treatments and the new advancements in how they grow this plant. It can be used in so many different ways, oils and food and other ways, as opposed to the traditional smoking.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're at the tip of the iceberg, and you actually are allowing individuals to do this. I think you'll start to see, once pharmaceutical companies get into this more, and if they're allowed to get into it more, you're going to start to see more creative ways to get this to a dosing place where it's better and to where it's safer. But again, the medicinal marijuana in the dispensaries in each of the states are very well controlled, but there's a lot of people who skirt that and are going back to, you know, just straight off the street drug dealers.
Dr. Kevin Most joins us every Monday. Today we talk medical marijuana, and I really enjoyed the three-part convo we had on insurance as well last time. And we look forward to next Monday. Doc Most, thanks for joining us.
You got it, Justin. We'll talk to you soon.
There you go. Awesome. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. I love that segment. I really do. He is a tremendous asset to this program and to the listeners of WGN.
His knowledge on things is, we don't even scratch the surface.
No.
But you can always go to WGNradio.com and you can get his full write-up, which has way more extensive notes on every topic we do.
There you go. All right. Coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, we got the most valuable person on the planet. And then, of course, later in the show, I should say, later in the show, we'll do the Chicago Accent Challenge, 312-981-7200. If you think you got the best Chicago accent, this is your chance. We have some questions for you to suss it out, and prizes to give away if we judge you to be the best. That's coming up later in the Steve Cochran Show.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
Steve Cochran Show, Justin in for Steve, stepping up for Steve. That's what we said the vernacular is, right?
Yeah, I think a texter suggested that last week.
Steve's back tomorrow. Dave's here. Mary's here. Mary's here. Steve Grzanich is here. We've got a great show coming up here in the 8 o'clock hour. We're going to talk, Heather Sharon's going to join us, talk police reform. This is a very interesting story about the consent decree and the federal government and the oversight on any sort of reforms with the Chicago Police Department. Pretty scathing in support of this, scathing editorial from the Chicago Tribune over the weekend saying it's about time, saying this is the seventh trying to reform the Chicago Police Department. Always gets hung up. And so this may be the one. They kind of alluded to the Shachtman Decree. I don't know if you're familiar with the Shachtman Decree. Was, I forgot the guy's first name, but Shachtman, where he had forced patronage hiring to get into the federal courts as well. A federal judge oversaw to make sure that people didn't do political work to get hired.
Okay.
And it worked. It worked in the way that that used to run rampant in Chicago. That was part of it. And this made politicians not necessarily give it up, but change the way they did it.
Hide it a little better. Yeah.
But that's the idea here. And, you know, it remains to be seen if the federal government's going to go along with this, because all this really is a blueprint that was put out by the Attorney General Lisa Madigan and the mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, to start negotiations with the police and with the federal government to come up with federal oversight, to have a judge oversee the reforms that are agreed upon. So we'll talk with Heather Sharon from the Daily Line. She's former DNA Info reporter, covers City Hall. She's been covering this story. She'll join us coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. So very interesting. We're on top of that story today. Lots going on, of course, as this is the week. There'll be a lot of conversation about Lollapalooza downtown. We're continuing to watch a lot of job and economic numbers coming out this week. A lot of big companies, including Apple and some of the car companies that will be project or giving their earnings reports this week. So we'll be all over that.
Dave's
as well.
Tracking Roquan, whatever he's
Roquan.
Up to.
Roquan.
Roquan, not Roquan.
You're doing both. You've tracked
Well, both, yes.
Yeah. Roquan Smith, another big story, the holdout, the rookie, the first round pick for the Chicago Bears, holding out because of language in the contract, which really is just about money. But very interesting. I think fascinating. I was trying, Dave, you'll love this. My wife was cooking dinner last night, and I was trying to explain the story to her. Mm-hmm. I'm like, it's not a sports story. I don't know. There's something more to this. The idea of if you're going to change a rule, there needs to be thought to how that contract in the future changes with the rule. And right now, the NFL has not changed the contract, yet they're saying that there are going to be harsher penalties for things that the players' union and players have said for years is out of their control. A lot of times, if a tackler, the idea of Roquan Smith, which is very interesting, a tackler, obviously hits with his helmet, we see a yellow flag come up in 15 yards. The NFL has said this year they're going to strictly enforce this and even eject players from the game. Ejections lead to suspensions. Suspensions lead to void of guaranteed money, which is said in the NFL contract. So the question Roquan Smith's people are asking is, hey, if you're going to do this and it's going to be something that is going to run, we don't know how this new rule is going to affect the game. If my client is going to be kicked out of games because of inadvertently hitting with his helmet, his $25 million signing bonus is on the line? That doesn't seem fair. And that's where they're at, and they're trying to figure out. And it's obviously he's not going to be on the field for the Hall of Fame game, which is a
and there's so much confusion over how this rule is going to be enforced. And they had a presentation by officials to the Philadelphia Eagles this week. And the Eagles were looking at tape of plays, and they said these were routine plays. And then the officials say, well, there's where we would have called it. So it's like, well, were other plays that looked like there was helmet to helmet, and they said, no, that's not an infraction.
This is Ryan Pace, the general manager of the Chicago Bears. This is a big test for him because he doesn't want to set precedent with the contract to change the wording so that this could be for future players. But now the onus shifts to the NFL, and this is an issue about how the organizations are going to deal with this, and it's less about the players' greed, which is always when it's been about.
And it's really not just about the Bears either.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, it's about the league.
So I have two questions for you, Dave. The Bears started early because of the Hall of Fame game. Mm-hmm. So are we going to see this issue with other players around the league this week, since when they're all reporting to camp?
Possibly.
Like, he can't be the only one.
There's two players, right, that have only held.
There are only two first-round picks who haven't signed. And then basically, and one's a quarterback. And there's also, I guess, some language involved in that, Sam Darnold with the Jets. But it's a different kind of thing because he's not a tackler. So, I don't think it really is.
Yeah.
So this is pretty much, he's out there on an island, kind of. That said, you're right, the Bears went in early, so they've still got plenty of time to get this worked out, get him into camp, and they will.
They better.
They will.
And then the other question I have for you is, is there going to be like a war room? Like, even if the guys on the field miss this helmet to helmet thing, is there a mission control that's going to be one
there
of those
is.
That
yeah.
is going to like affect those calls?
Well, that's how replay it works now. And they have the guy goes under the hood, but he's not by himself on that.
We saw this happen last year too, but if there's a helmet to helmet hit and the officials on the field miss it, they can go next week, like on Monday, the NFL can review it and say, we saw helmet to helmet, you're suspended.
Well, it's been that way for a while.
Yeah.
The league could come back, even if a guy wasn't flagged, the league can come back and suspend him after they look at it.
Yeah.
So, look, it's all well-intentioned, which is to try to save football, because as things are going with the concern about helmet-to-helmet hits, the concern about concussions, there's genuine concern about can the sport survive.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to make it safer, but they have to figure out exactly how to do that.
It's an interesting debate. Yeah. I'd like to see how this plays out with Roquan Smith. All right, back to our celebrity this is great. Our celebrity text question of the day, Mary. This is, you met Kenny Chesney for the first time. You thought you were going to marry him. Now, after meeting him, that's on hold.
Yes, because he is much smaller than I thought, and we would not make we wouldn't be a good couple. I would feel like a giant all the time.
So that is the text question of the day. Have you met, you had a celebrity crush, or you loved a certain celebrity and you met them and it changed your mind? Could be for the good or the bad. And I want to hedge, I want to put a caveat on this, because there are going to be a lot of sports athletes and others who you go up to them going, hey, can I get a picture? And they're like, no pictures. And then you're like, I hate this guy. That's not what we're talking about, because that's celebrities at a certain point have a right to their privacy, and if they don't answer or take pictures, that's a little different than this guy was shorter than I thought he was. Well, 219 says, I had a crush on Renee Zellweger until she married Kenny Chesney. Right?
Yeah,
312 says, I don't have to meet Mariah Carey. I would still marry her sight unseen, for sure.
Well, okay,
it's not really sight unseen,
yeah,
is it?
Right, exactly.
You mentioned meet that you, Mariah Carey was on your list of
Yeah, I had mentioned Mariah
personality.
Carey. Personality. Yeah. And there's so many great celebrity stories about her. She's like the modern-day diva in the way that you can... There are so many great celebrity encounters with Mariah Carey where people are like, she did what now? But I would like to see that firsthand.
And then you can judge for yourself.
Then I judge for myself.
If she's marriage material.
Yeah. 708 says, it's the male munchkin from The Wizard of Oz. I think they're just playing on the height stuff there. And 708 says, Booger from Revenge of the Nerds.
There you go.
They don't give the story, though.
Maybe it runs in my family, the height thing, because I know when Robert Redford was filming Ordinary People in Lake Forest, my mom was 18, and she loved him, and then saw him in person there, and he was very small, and it crushed her, because she, I think, also had pretended she was going to marry Robert Redford, and then...
crushed her. Yeah. You know, I know that a lot of people, you know, who probably is on both sides of the aisle, is Bill Murray. You could meet Bill Murray and be like, this is the, and you see stories of this all the time, this is the most amazing celebrity encounter. He hung out for 6 hours at my wedding. It was amazing. And then it's the other side where I've never been, you know, like
more turned off
by a celebrity's behavior. That kind of is a perfect guy for this. Maybe we should just make the text question about Bill Murray. A lot to do. Coming up, the most valuable person on the planet here on 720 WGN.
The building blocks of shishi. Shishi meat, peaches, and guacamole.
What's that?
What's up?
Wasabi.
I love guacamole. It's my favorite.
What's up?
Oh, this is really hot guacamole. Oh, holy guacamole. Yeah.
Feel the avocado. Guacamole. Guacamole.
It's 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Steve Cochran back tomorrow. 720. He will be here for the 6 to 10, the 720, 720. It is 720 right now, so it is time for the most valuable person on the planet for Monday, July 30th, 2018. And today, Guaclandia, is that the avocado-themed bus serving bottomless guac, will tour America, coming to Evanston and the Evanston Art and Big Fork Festival on August 17th through the 19th. This is an exhibit, interactive, by the way. Mary, it's interactive.
That everything is an experience now. Yeah. You can't just have a truck pull up with guacamole. Yeah. You got to have something to take a picture in front of.
I love that it's an interactive exhibit. Interactive, which kicked off in San Fran, and it's a food-themed pop-up. There's a pop art-style avocado wall where you can pose for photos, an oversized avocado-shaped chair where you can sit in the pit. There's also a retro arcade, where guests can compete for prizes, and a claw machine that you can try to snap up avocado-themed merch.
Merch?
Yeah. Right. So this is really following in the tradition of the food-themed exhibits, and you can get, in Guaclandia, you can actually get bottomless guacamole.
So I think Dave probably loves the idea of Guaclandia because it's a healthy fat.
Yeah.
And so that's right in your diet. I'm a big guacamole fan. Yeah. I don't know about you, Justin.
Yeah, I love it.
Are you
sure.
Bottomless guac? I have no self-control around guac, actually.
I know I mentioned this on the air before. I think Whole Foods has a kale guacamole.
Guac kale. Yeah.
Yeah, which is really good.
It's really good, yeah. I'm with you. Don't look to me to have any conflict over kale.
Good.
I am in the Dave Ennett camp when it comes to kale.
Does the kale stuff turn brown, though, like the regular guacamole?
You know what? It doesn't, but you can only buy it in the small container, so it doesn't last long in our house. So if it goes beyond a day.
I think everything still turns brown. But that means
it's natural. You just got to stir it up.
That's also, it doesn't last long enough. Same here, Mary.
Eat it up.
Yeah, it's gone.
That is so smooth. So I wonder if they're doing the made-to-order guac, this bottomless guac. you know, like right, right there. Right, I like right. to watch it. I like a good table.
There should
side.
Be on this avocado bus, there should be a part of it in the exhibit, a room just for avocado cuts to your hand, the new avocado cut.
All right.
Have you seen this? That everyone is going to emergency rooms around the country because the way that you cut an avocado, more and more people are slicing their fingers.
Ew.
Yeah, it's a big thing. And now we were making jokes about it.
A celebrity just did it recently. Yeah. It was somebody we talked to. I swear because when you get the pit, yep. you're supposed to whack it with the knife, and they're missing their... They're missing
yeah,
the...
Yeah, our friend Chris, it just was... We were at the Sox game. We went to the Sox game on Friday, and she was showing us her avocado cut on her hand. So I guess
didn't know that was a thing.
It's a thing, and it's becoming a big... we should ask Doc Most about it.
We'll
be able to tell us about the avocado finger. There's a name for it. It's like the
avocado hand.
Is that what it is? Avocado hand?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And it's become popular because this is happening all the time throughout history, I'm sure. But celebrities are on the avocado craze. And when they cut their hand, it's a big deal.
Andy Dorfman, Meryl Streep, and Joy Behar. That's who it was. Joy Behar. Right, Mayor? We talked about it right when it happened. Yeah. So,
there you go. So,
you know what? Probably. Who's that little talk show host? Not Jimmy Kimmel, but the smaller one, who's kind of wild and crazy.
James Corden?
No, the other one.
Jimmy Fallon.
Jimmy Fallon. He started off with the hand injury by having the ring injury.
Right. And then
now they're all now all these celebrities are getting avocado hand.
Yeah, one of the Bachelorettes, Andy Dorfman, she had surgery from it too.
For avocado hand?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that just the idea that they don't know how to handle a knife, or is there something specific about all of the cutting and slicing that goes with an avocado?
Well, you know, it could get tricky. I know a few before when people ate carbs, there was the bagel cutting injuries.
Yeah, right.
You know, because of the knife jumps off of the bagel and right into your hand. Because you shouldn't cut into your hand, but...
Right.
That's
why I cut all of my avocados with plastic knives.
Do you? That's wise. My wife cuts cantaloupes, and it makes me crazy. And she's fine. She never cuts herself doing it, but they're trying to scrape out the fruit from inside the rind with a knife.
Ah!
And I'm like, I don't know.
Buy her a melon baller.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah, well, but then you don't get all of the fruit.
Oh,
sure you do. You could just use the melon baller.
Steve,
you're preaching to the choir
Dave,
here.
Things are tough around your household that you're going to get every piece of fruit off that rind.
Steve,
I feel like there's a startup coming too to solve this avocado thing. You know, like with the bagel slicer.
Yeah.
There's going to be an avocado slicer.
Yeah, you think somebody would have.
It's a billion-dollar
idea.
There's
got to be one out there.
The problem with the bagel slicer is if you got like a really good New York-style bagel, they didn't fit in the slicers. Like the slicer was only good for
you have to go manual.
Like the small. Right.
Oh, the guillotine?
Yeah, the guillotine, right. So,
well, avocado hand, hopefully there's a whole exhibit in this pop-up Guaclandia about avocado hand. You can get bottomless guacamole. And Evanston at the Evanston, what is this called? The Evanston Art and Big Fork Festival, which will be August 17th through the 19th in Evanston, of course. Guaclandia, the most valuable interactive exhibit on the planet for Monday, July 30th.
That's right.
I think we have a field trip scheduled.
Yeah, that's right. A live remote.
That has WGN radio written all over it, actually.
And we have to cut our hands. We have to all cut our hands together. All right, coming up, Ryan Nobles from CNN going to join us. We'll talk about the economy, of course, the GDP numbers, what to expect this week, and also the continuing argument between the president and the press. We saw over the weekend that there was a meeting between the New York Times publisher and the president. We'll talk about what was said there and what they agreed upon and whether or not the press is still the enemy of the people. Direct quote from the president. 312-981-7200. If you would like to chime in, it's Steve Cochran Show here on 720 WGN.
Tomorrow, the White Sox welcome the Kansas City Royals to Guaranteed Rate Field on Chicago Bulls Night. Show your Sox and Bulls pride. Andy's got the pregame 6:35. Ed and DJ from the South Side at 7:10.
Flagship home of the Chicago White Sox, 7:20 WGN.
Okay, honey, it's back to school shopping time. Now, what do we do?
I go to my happy place.
And what do we find in our happy place?
Oh, I see jeans, dresses, shoes, coats, sweaters, t-shirts, all sizes, styles, and fashions. Yeah, everything the kids need.
And what else?
The prices. They're so low.
Right, and where is this happy place?
Goodwill. It's Goodwill.
Smart lady. Don't stress over back-to-school shopping. Get more for less at Goodwill. Amazing.
When posting on most job sites, you get candidates.
I'm the sales director you're looking for.
But when you post on Indeed.com, you get the candidates just right for you.
I'm a sales director with an MBA, over 10 years experience, who's also fluent in Japanese.
With Indeed, you can add screener questions for a less time-consuming route to your short list of qualified candidates.
Arigato.
Hiring's better when you've got your short list. Save time on hiring when you post a job on Indeed. Get started today at Indeed.com/hire.
What happens when you come home after a long day and the AC is out? Call ABC and consider it done. Trust the air conditioning experts at ABC for fast, reliable service, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Schedule today by calling 888-809-6099. That's 888-809-6099 or online at 4abc.com. ABC Plumbing, Sewer, Heating, Cooling, and Electric. Consider it done.
The right healthcare matters. Riverside Healthcare, the award-winning health system, serves communities just south of the south suburbs, from heart care and neurosurgery to cancer care and orthopedics. Riverside also offers a variety of primary and specialty care providers in locations throughout the region. Riverside offers just the right care for you, the kids, the whole family, when and where you need it most, because convenience matters too. Visit RiversideHealthcare.org for locations, services, to schedule an appointment, and more. Riverside Healthcare, putting well within reach.
All right, coming up, Ryan Noble's going to join us. We'll talk about the economy. We'll talk about a possible shutdown. And, of course, we'll talk about the evil media. Is that too, was that too biased in my approach to evil media? I'm just quoting.
Yeah, you're
quoting. I feel
quoting.
Like I'm quoting.
No, so. I get it.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Looks like we cut a nerve. It's maybe better for the avocado hand story. Many people texting in 312-981-7200 with their horror stories, Mary, or telling us where to find proper proper tools.
Right, there is a plastic cutter and things, but from the 763 area code, which I do not know where that is.
763.
My wife just cut her ring finger on an avocado on Saturday and had to get 5 stitches. She was a trooper and still spent the day by the lake. And she didn't realize it was a thing, but she's a trendsetter, so way to go. She's part of the celebrity avocado
is.
Hand club.
We'll see if Dean Richards brings her up in the 8 o'clock.
And then somebody suggested you quarter it, and then you don't ever have to
That's the combination. Has been horror stories of cutting their hands from avocados. The second thing is how you cut an avocado to avoid cutting your hand. And the third is, here are pictures of things you can buy that would help you cut an avocado. And that's what we're getting right now.
Or just use a cutting board.
Yeah.
That might help instead of putting it in your hand.
But yeah, sometimes right. It exactly. Mushes the avocado. But as Dave, you know this, Justin hates the mention of Amazon, but everyone is saying that you can get the products on Amazon. So
I'm getting typecast. I don't hate that. All right. I'm not going to get back into it. Let's go to Ryan Nobles. Ryan from CNN joins us weekly here on the Steve Cochran Show. Ryan, thanks for joining us, bud.
Justin, thanks for having me on. I do have an unpopular opinion. I'm not a fan of avocados or guacamole. Whatever I say that, people look at me cross-eyed. I don't think I'm at any risk of cutting my hand anytime soon.
You are a talk show host at heart. You have just brought up conflict, so the lines are going to go crazy.
That is
be like Ryan Noble's crazy.
Did you have a bad experience with some guacamole, or what don't you like?
Well, I'm not a fan, first of all, of mushy foods, and guacamole is a mushy food. I'm not a huge fan of the taste. I don't hate it. Like, if it ends up in something that I eat, I can usually tolerate it, but I'm not one of these people that's going to add, an extra $2 to my burrito just to put guacamole in it. That's not happening.
Well,
not
worth it. Maybe the word mushy is a nice transition to our conversation here. It looks like, it was revealed yesterday that the New York Times and the president had an quote-unquote off-the-record meeting to talk about the president's continuing attack on the media. It became on the record because the president tweeted about that meeting. So they're not mushy and lovey right now, but it seems like at least there's a discourse behind closed doors about how the president is approaching the media and the media approaching the president.
Such a bizarre place that we're in, that a meeting like this has to take place, I think, first of all. But, I wonder about the New York Times' decision to try and even think that a meeting like this would be productive. I applaud the publisher for for attempting to try and see through this this tension between the president and the media. But going into a meeting like that, you would be under the impression that somehow the president was open to changing his behavior, or that his behavior as it relates to the press isn't something that's actually working for him. And so he would be motivated to change his conduct. And, you know, it totally blew up in the face of the New York Times. They went in with, you know, from what I could see, and not knowing, not being in the room and not being privy to their decision making, with an open mind, hoping that they could talk to the president about toning down his rhetoric. And the president just totally backed off and just decided to blow up the meeting and continue on down that same line that he's been doing in the past. And, you know, the publisher put out a statement, you know, saying specifically, you know, trying to show the president the real world impact of this, that they have to have armed guards outside the New York Times because of the threats to journalists. Whenever I travel on the road now with CNN, we almost always have some form of private protection with us because that threat is real. The president either doesn't seem to appreciate that or doesn't seem to care. I think the big thing this meeting shows us is that his behavior is just not going to change. He's going to keep up this idea that the press, the journalists of America, are somehow the enemy of the people.
And not to mention how other people around the world, other leaders around the world, can use that as cover to round up journalists, to have violence against journalists, and so forth. But what I find interesting about this story is that the New York Times and Donald Trump go way back. I mean, they go back to the real estate days of Donald Trump. And it seems more often than not that most of these big media companies, they are doing what they've been doing for the last, covering the president. And the president takes it personal. There seems to be a personal nature to the president's relationship with the media.
Well, I don't think this is any going to come as a surprise to anyone, but the president loves the New York Times. You know, he spent his entire adult life attempting to get his name in the New York Times as much as possible. So, you know, for a long time in his career, particularly in his career as a politician, he's been on the outside looking in, wanting to be a player in this world and wanting to be quoted in the New York Times, wanting the New York Times to garner his opinion on world affairs like Syria or Russia or immigration, all these things. And for most of his adult life, the New York Times didn't really care all that much about what he thought about politics. They may have reported about the salacious aspects of his personal life, you know, the real estate deals that he was closing in New York. But in terms of the big issues that were facing most Americans and most New Yorkers, the Times just wasn't going to come to Donald Trump and look for his opinion. So now he's in a position where they really care what he thinks about these things. And, you know, he's also getting the other side of it, where they're going to look into every aspect of his life in terms of whether or not he's doing things the right way. And that blowback seems to be a little bit too much for him. What he's looking for, he's not looking for the New York Times to cease to exist. And you can even see this in how he talks about the media. He's not looking for the media not to report on him. He desperately wants media coverage. What he wants is fawning puff pieces about how wonderful he is, and he's using the line that media outlets that aren't reporting on him in that fashion are unpatriotic, which, to your point, Justin, is the beginning of a slippery slope toward totalitarianism.
That's ridiculous rhetoric, and that's the, I think that's where we get caught up in this, because there may be, and I know we're two media guys talking to each other, but there's always criticism of the media of balance and trying to find out exactly what the truth is in a story when one paper will say one thing and one says the other. And there is, and you hear this from, I mean, people are texting in right now, and the president echoed this in the tweets yesterday, this concept that, you know, whenever they do something positive, the media is looking for a negative spin. And I think that you could talk to President Obama and he would say the same thing. And I think you'd talk to President Bush and he would say the same thing, and down the line, because that is, seems to be, at least a consistent thread when it comes to, media overall, capital M media, and its coverage of the White House.
Well, and here's the other thing, too, is that, I think as a member of the media, when we're covering government leaders, it is our job to be looking out for the best interests of the citizenry that are represented by those leaders. So you might be looking with a more critical eye than you would, coverage of your kid's Little League baseball team. You know, so I'm not going to talk about the fact that my kid struck out three times in my story. I'm going to talk about the fact that he made contact on a foul ball.
Right.
This is a little bit different. We're dealing with the big time here, and these issues that presidents have to deal with have to be under a bright white spotlight so that the people of the United States know what exactly their leadership is doing. And I've dealt with politicians. You know, Donald Trump is not unique in this respect. You're 100% right, Justin. They get very fired up because you don't talk about all the wonderful things I'm doing. You're only talking about the terrible things I'm doing. First of all, that's not 100% true. But secondly, that's because the big things, that the tough decisions that one have to make have got to be put up under the scrutiny of the public eye. And it's going to influence your decision. It's going to be informed with your decision. And if you are confident that you're making the right decision, it'll all work out in the end. It's not going to matter what a newspaper or a television report says about you. So, you know, you've got to have a lot thicker skin to be a reporter and to be a member of the to be a leader, to be a politician, because you've got to withstand that. And you know what's interesting about Donald Trump is he claims that he wants all this fawning coverage of him, but the reporters he respects the most, I mean, the best example being Maggie Haberman from The New York Times, are the reporters that are the toughest on him. You know, he continues to give Maggie access, and rightly so, because her reporting has been some of the best. You know, even in our respect, Jim Acosta, who the president rails against a lot, he still has an appreciation and a respect for Jim Acosta. He even said that in one of his tweets, that Jim is a nice guy. So, you know, and I've dealt with that with politicians my entire career. Politicians respect reporters who challenge them and who force them to be their best. And I don't think this is any different. And this is almost a sideshow, what's going on with the president, where he claims that the press is the enemy of the people. I don't think he really believes that, but I think it plays well with his base. So he's going to continue to manipulate that.
So, Ryan, you know, at the shortest, we're going to have this president for 4 years, the longest 8 years. Whoever, you know, follows him, if he is somebody that has a better relationship with the press and only says nice things and builds up a relationship, does that change the way you cover it? You know, you're reporting unbiased, aren't you? Whether he's telling you your fake news or not fake news, you have to cover it the same, don't you, regardless of if the president likes you or not?
You know, Mary, it's such a great point. You know, I think this is a great example, too. You know, I think you look at John McCain. John McCain has had a really good relationship with the press for a long time, and he's always friendly with reporters. He jokes with them. He knows them all by their first name. And there's some sort of perception that John McCain gets better coverage as a result of that. Now, he might get on TV more because of that, because he's willing to be on TV more. But there's been plenty of times where John McCain has gotten tough coverage of something that he's done, and he's almost kind of surprised because, hey, listen, I'm nice to you guys. Why are you doing this? Well, that's because as a reporter, you've got to treat politicians the same exact way, regardless of how they treat you personally. You know, I've dealt with plenty of politicians over the course of my career. Some were nice to me, some were mean to me, but I still reported the facts about what they were doing for the people that they represent. And sometimes that makes them look good, and sometimes it makes them look bad. You know, I always remember I covered Eric Cantor, the House Majority Leader, for a long time when I was a reporter in Richmond. And he was very nice to me. He would send me notes when I had a kid born, would send me a note if I got a promotion at work. That didn't change how I covered him. And every once in a while, his press secretary would kind of be miffed because, why are you reporting such a negative story about the congressman? He's been so nice to you. Yeah, he's been very nice to me. But I still have to report this news. That's just the way it works. So I'm not going to say that it isn't a good idea for members for politicians to be kind to reporters, but it shouldn't change the way they report. And let me just make this caveat to all of this, Mary. That doesn't mean that reporters are perfect. We all screw up all the time. It doesn't mean that we're above criticism. You know, I've seen a lot of that, you know, that reporters are trying to put ourselves on pedestals in the midst of all this and act like we don't do no wrong. Mm-hmm. We mess things up a lot. We are human beings, just like politicians are human beings. We deserve to be scrutinized. We deserve to be criticized, and we need to adjust and adapt when we make those mistakes. It's a two-way street, and the only way that we're going to regain that trust, and part of the reason that we might be losing that trust is because we've been exposed to a certain extent. We've all got to get better. But I think the grand point here is that the president's rhetoric doesn't help that process at all.
Ryan Noble, CNN, joins us every week here on the Steve Cochran Show. Ryan, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks. I appreciate you not making me do a Chicago accent either. That would have been disastrous for all of us.
That's right. That's right. Ryan Nobles, I want to talk about the shutdown stuff, and we can talk about that next week because that's a little ways out. But very interesting about the perception of how the media covers the White House and how this is being called out, because there's a lot of texts coming in saying, oh, it's unfair, it's unfair, it's unfair. Oh, the last president didn't get this. But I was like, I'm thinking in my head, and I'm like, the last president tried to push a universal health care that every single day was in the media with complete chaos. Right?
The last president was accused of not being a United States citizen almost on a daily
right,
basis.
Right. So, yeah. So it's just interesting that sometimes we have a revisionist history to remember, but we just didn't have in that case that president who was tweeting back, if you look at that.
You know, there's a great Bob Newhart bit of the Abe Lincoln where it's Abe talking to an ad agency on Michigan Avenue about how he should write things on the back of envelopes, wear the hat, and things like that. I hope Bob Newhart stays around long enough to be able to do a bit about this president talking to an ad agency on being advised on different tactics and things.
It's
I would
funny.
Personally enjoy that.
Go see the Springfield, the Lincoln Library. They have an exhibit about all of the bad press that Abraham Lincoln got from the media and these political cartoons. It's intense. It's
phenomenal.
It's
the language
much more,
they
yeah,
use
it's
in
much
it
more intense than what
wow.
we're seeing today. So
what
this
you're
is
saying
an,
is
this
that
American
bad
thing.
Bad press has happened before yesterday.
This is a thing.
And then can I just add one other thing from a journalist standpoint? If all of pretty much all of what you're doing is viewed by the public as negative, then it's going to be written from a negative point of view, right? I mean, here's a president that has an approval rating of 38%. His policies are questionably negative, right? Most of them. So he would get negative press, right? That would be negative.
Yeah.
Most people's
I guess
minds.
It's just the idea of what people expect or what the expectations are of the press. Are you supposed to be a mouthpiece? Are you supposed to say this is fun? You know, that just as Ryan Nobles eloquently said, that this is the job is to shine a bright light on the White House because the press represents the people. All right, we'll continue here on the Steve Cochran Show. Coming up 8 o'clock, Dean Richards joins us. Lots to talk about in entertainment. And at 8:40, we'll talk with Heather Sharone about the latest on whether or not a federal judge would be able to bring police reform to Chicago. We'll have those conversations. But first, coming up, Dean Richards joins us. I mean, he can talk a little bit about celebrity crushes. Dean's got some of the greatest stories about celebrity interaction, not necessarily celebrity crushes. 312 says, Avril Lavigne, I thought she was cute, but meeting her in person, she was so much cuter. Still crushing on her. So that's a positive story. On the other side, 847 says, a lifelong crush on Dennis Quaid. Saw him this summer. Crush is cured. I don't even know. I feel terrible. What does that even mean?
It doesn't be his recent face work.
Oh, yeah. He did. Oh,
yeah,
he did.
That's what Dean was talking about a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
So he doesn't measure up in real life.
Yeah, or I guess on screen anymore because he's done a bunch of work or something. I don't know. I'm trying to think of. I know I have crushes that I've met. Now I'm like, eh.
Are you concerned, Justin, that perhaps you've planted this idea that you were somebody's celebrity crush, and you may have dashed their thoughts and dreams?
Yes, that's a big anxiety of mine. For all the times that people come up to me on the street, and I'm such an ass to them.
Well, it might not be that. You might not.
They may meet you in person.
It's
like, oh, I thought you'd be taller.
Yeah, I thought you were 6'6".
I assume you had a lot more hair.
Right.
You know, it could be a comment.
You're always
like
talking
that.
About your ponytail, and you don't have a ponytail.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman stepping up for Steve, who's back tomorrow. Dave Ennett's here. Mary Sandberg's here. Mary Vandeville, Steve Brzanich, 312-981-7200. Dean Richards joins us from our super celebrity TV station. Is that the best way to say that?
Sure.
Every time I see Dean in any form, like if I go to the morning show and I'm there, it's just crawling with celebrities. They're everywhere.
Everywhere.
They're just like they're in the walls.
Charo is here today. Carrot Top.
There you go. They're all there.
Give you an idea. Norm Crosby, and I don't even know if he's still alive.
It's like a Vegas lobby.
Well, Dean's a celebrity magnet, so.
Yeah. That we know. Lots of celebrity, lots of entertainment news. I mean, Kenny Chesney was at Soldier Field this weekend, as well as the Foo Fighters at Wrigley Field.
And yeah, I want to get the Kenny Chesney scoop from Mary, because I was not at that show.
You missed out.
She tells me that it's great. I do have a clip, though. We did send a camera crew, so people, you want to hear a little?
Yeah, let's do a little. Let's start with Kenny Chesney. You got a clip, Joe?
Mary, what were the highlights?
Well, number one, he played my favorite song, which is Anything But Mine, which happens to feature the name Mary in it quite a bit.
Good enough.
Is that not a hit? Would he not play that?
It's like from 2002.
Oh, so and so a lot of Chesney.
He has like 30 top hits. So how do you know if your song is going to get played? And he played it early.
But do you mostly love it because your name is featured in the song?
Well, I'll have to go back and plug in another name and see if I still like it as much. But it's about a guy and a girl, you know, hooking up because he's going to be leaving town the next day. So I think I like it anyway.
Can't think of one song with Justin in it or Dean?
Dean. No, there's Dean. Yeah, the Dean. There's probably a lot of Kenny Chesney who says Dean in it.
Yeah, Dean.
I don't think so.
No. Anyway, so he is fabulous. He's like a Bruce Springsteen Dean, where he's in amazing shape and performs the whole entire time.
Yeah, he looked great in the video that I saw. He hurt himself?
Yeah.
Like a month ago or something like that, and still performed many shows. Limping, and clearly he was recovering from the injury, but from the video, he seems like he's 100% right now.
Yeah, he was great. He was a perfect evening at Soldier Field.
And Mary got to meet him.
Did you get to meet him, really?
I did get to meet him. And Dean, I've loved him for a long time. I've often thought that I should marry him. But now that I've stood next to him, we aren't a great match because he's very tiny.
I do recall that from I interviewed him one time, and I remembered it's like, oh, look at you.
Yeah, they're small, and I've met
cute.
Right. I've met small before, but this was tiny.
And he's shorter without his hat and boots.
I'm not short shaming at all, but it's just a surprise because his onstage persona is so gigantic.
Exactly. I mean, he's bigger than life when he's on that stage, and then when he's standing next to me, I could never wear a white dress next to him. I would look like an elephant. You know, it wouldn't work. So anyway.
Because people who have never seen me on TV or met me personally often, you know, the perception of me, I guess by my voice, is that I'm a tall black woman.
Right.
And so people are surprised when they actually meet me in person. So, but he also had some guest performers with him on the show, right?
Yeah. Thomas Rhett, Brandon Lay came out, and Old Dominion came out. They all were the acts leading up to him, and they all came out and sang, which I love when they do that.
Me too.
I've been disappointed when we've seen the bigger shows, like the Eagles. They didn't have Chris Stapleton come out and play with them. Hmm. You know, and he's the one that opened for them. Like, I get a little bummed about that. So I enjoy when they work them in.
It's like at Lollapalooza.
Right.
No, but because there's so many artists at Lollapalooza that you're bound to have somebody on stage who is featuring somebody else who's in the festival.
Who are just hanging out.
Yeah, and you're like, okay, so I'd love to see that person come out for this song. And then you're always disappointed when you're like, they couldn't go across the park. Right. And right. perform on this one? No, right. They're already back at the hotel. Cool.
There's and I know the concert was great, but it's Soldier Field. It's 61,000 people. There's a chance that the performer is going to get lost in a giant venue like that. It does not sound like that was the case at all.
No, they were able to find the stage, and they executed that well. And at the very end, he signs a guitar and gives it to a kid on stage, and then he gives him a Chicago Bears football helmet to another kid, and
that's nice.
It's really cute. It's a good way to
end. Other big concert this weekend, of course, the Foo Fighters at Wrigley Field.
This is tremendous.
This is always tremendous for them to play Wrigley Field because their roots, Dave Grohl's roots, was right across the street at the Cubby Bear. The Cubby Bear, before it was the place you went to get Jaeger bombs before the Cubs game, used to be a punk rock club in the 80s, and that's where Dave Grohl got his performed his first show. at the Cubby Bears. It's kind of cool that he's in proximity. I think
yeah, it's
awesome.
Near and dear to him. He's not originally from here, but he feels like his musical roots are very much firmly planted in Chicago. Do you have your earplugs in?
Yes.
This is loud. Give this a quick listen.
Great.
They played for 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Oh, my gosh. That's Jeez, a long show.
Those are some rock and rollers right there.
You know, I always like the Wrigley Field concerts because you can stand at Addison and Clark and hear it without having to go
right,
to the building.
Right. You could stand at Addison and Western and hear it pretty much. It was their first time there in 3 years, the last time that they were there. Remember, he broke his leg and
right.
they fashioned this throne for him to sit and still perform. So this was his first time up and around again. And Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick joined them on stage.
See, there you go. That's great.
Yeah, and they did Fats Domino's Ain't That a Shame. I don't know if Rick Nielsen is going to be part of the show tonight, but the Foo Boys will be back at the Friendly
there
Confines tonight.
Dean Richards with us here on 720 WGN. All right, here's what we'll do. We'll take a break, and we'll come back, and we got to talk about the Bruce Willis roast, which I saw the first 15 minutes of before I put my head on my pillow before to get ready for the show. We'll talk with Dean Richards about that and some other stories.
Dean Richards, the entertainment editor, Channel 9 and 720.
Dean Richards joins us every morning at 8 o'clock. We're talking entertainment. We got through the concerts, but last night the big event was the roast of Bruce Willis.
So which ones did you see if you went to bed
early? I saw Nikki Glaser, who I told my wife right before I left, I go, that's what a great way to start Nikki Glaser, only because she is so dirty. And that is what a roast is supposed to be. She's like, she's just so eviscerated.
Am I not remembering these roasts as well? This seemed like the filthiest roast ever. Ever.
They don't even have anything to do with Bruce Willis or any of the people on the dais.
Oh my God.
It's straight up dirt.
My jaw was dropping nonstop last night at some of the things that they were saying. And, you know, that they were bleeping out. So, for the live broadcast, they bleeped out some of the words, but they left some pretty big ones still in, which surprised me. And I'm told that, I don't know if it's on YouTube or somewhere online, there's a completely unedited version that would be great for you to play in your office today, just while you're sitting at your computer in your cubicle and let some of these things fly. I was editing some of these things this morning and putting in some additional bleeps. And, you know, it's blasting out of my computer speaker here some really inappropriate things.
Funny. Well, let's hear a little bit of the roast.
He is a great father. I mean, seriously. I mean, every Christmas, right after he would have the girls go make him his special coffee with medicine. I mean, he would come down the chimney in the wife beater T-shirt, waving that gun, saying, yippee-ki-yay, motherfuckers.
Bruce Willis, you love your country so much. He once said that if the people wanted it, he might even run for president someday. I'd make fun of you for having political aspirations, but the last time I did that, the f***er actually became president. All night, people are saying I look like you, but Sybil Shepherd looks like Bruce Jenner Willis.
Bruce Willis, I'm so happy to see you. Gosh, the last time I saw your face, I was shopping for movies at the gas station.
Sybil Shepherd, my oldest friend. There's people I've known longer, but you are my oldest friend. It's so great to have the esteemed diplomat Dennis Rodman here. Dennis, how do you and Kim Jong-un communicate when neither of you speak English?
So go to number two. Go to cut number two instead of the number three, like sure. I said. Because Martha Stewart, who was hilarious at this thing, and dirty, by the way, she also talked about Dennis Rodman.
What a dais. Dennis Rodman, where do I begin? If you had told me back in the 90s that Dennis Rodman would be negotiating a nuclear arms agreement in 2018, I would have said, Dennis Rodman is alive in 2018.
Bruce, you keep making these f***ing bombs. But guess what? So does Kim Jong-un. But at least Kim is smart enough not to release his.
Kevin Pollak, I love you, man, but that Christopher Walken impression is so old, Ashton Kutcher tried to marry it.
Unlike everyone here tonight, I personally have a great appreciation for Bruce's music. I play it at all my parties when it's late, and I want everyone to leave immediately.
People ask me why I did this roast. Was it because one of the last guys who did it became president? Hell no. Why would I want to be president when I can just keep being Bruce f***ing Willis? I did this roast for one reason and for one reason only. To settle something once and for all. Now please listen very carefully. Die Hard is not a Christmas movie.
It's a subject of much conversation.
Well, there weren't enough Bartles and James jokes. Like, he was the spokesperson for the wine coolers back in the day. I was assuming they'd come straight out with that right at the beginning, but they didn't see that.
It was funny. The whole thing was pretty funny.
It is funny. The Comedy Central roast, the only problem I have is that they'll diversify the dais to get as many different types of people up there, actors, others. And they had Joseph Gordon-Levitt be the MC. It's getting to a point where you could tell all of their stuff is written by somebody else. I think that's why I like Nikki Glaser. It always feels, even if somebody else wrote her material, she owns it and she makes it personal and you think it's from her voice. A lot of the times you get up there, like Joseph Gordon-Levitt, you could tell he's just reading something that some writers wrote him about Bruce Willis.
Yeah, well, I mean, he did do a movie with him. He did the movie Loopers with him, and I got the sense that they, you know, were friends. But, you know, for example, a Chicago comedian, Lil Rel Howery, was there. And except for watching Bruce Willis movies, admitted on the dais that he had zero connection to this whole thing. I mean, there were some people up there. It's like, why are you even there?
They're Comedy Central stars.
Edward Norton was on the dais, and he was kind of funny, but why is Edward Norton there? It didn't make any sense, but it was funny. And like I said, the full clips are all online.
Dean, we have a text question going today about celebrity crushes that you may have met and then you had a different impression after. And just I want to go on record, Bruce Willis and Edward Norton, both celebrity crushes of mine.
Did you meet them and it changed?
Not yet, so they're just still really held high in my mind.
Let me tell you, having met and interviewed both of them several times, your Bruce Willis crush would still be intact. He is what you see is what he is. The Edward Norton one, not so much.
Oh. Yeah, Bruce Willis is, my wife said it last night too, the reason he's continued to be a star is he's hot.
Oh, he's hot.
I don't see it, but, you know, I don't see hotness.
It's the baldness.
Yeah, but it's the baldness. He continues to be a sex symbol. All right, real quick, Neil Diamond puts on a mini concert for firefighters.
There's apparently been, you know, raging fires in where he lives. I did not know he lived in the Colorado area, but he does. And even though he went into retirement in January because he's been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, went to the fire station and performed a mini concert for 70 people to say thank you to these firefighters for saving their community.
That's great.
Basically. And Neil Diamond, he looked great. He sounded great.
Bob Odenkirk shows off his Better Call Saul tattoo. I saw the picture. This is great.
They were meeting with television critics, the stars, over the weekend, and he was talking about the new season of Better Call Saul, and he wanted to show the logo where people would remember it. And it's a fake tattoo, I think. It looks like a fake tattoo, but it's on his buttocks.
Okay. The best part is he has to pull his pants down
to show it. He pulls his pants down to show off his Better Call Saul buttocks tattoo, which this is, you know, probably a good time to announce. I don't know if Steve mentioned it to all of you, but when Steve is back tomorrow, all of us are going to be required to get Steve Cochran tattoos on our buttocks.
Our buttocks and our lower hips.
I hope it's not his head, because that takes up a lot of real estate.
That would be one full cheek, at least.
And finally, on a much more serious note, news today, Les Moonves, the story that came out, Ronan Farrow's story about sexual misconduct allegations. CBS is dealing with this today.
How about this Ronan Farrow, by the way, because he's the one that broke the Harvey Weinstein story. And now he breaks this other story about the CEO of CBS, Les Moonves, about sexual allegation charges that have been leveled against him. CBS Today is forming a committee to decide what they're going to do. They have hired an independent law firm that will be conducting the investigation about this. And they're going to decide whether or not he should step aside while this investigation goes forward. But Moonves acknowledged in a statement that he made advances toward women decades ago, but he said that he always understood that no means no, and said he never hindered anybody's career as a result of that. So.
Very interesting. We'll see the developments play out today.
Yep.
Dean Richards, thanks, bud.
See you tomorrow.
There you go. Dean Richards here on 720 WGN. We'll take a break, get the news, and coming up, Heather Sharon will talk about the plans for federal oversight for Chicago police reform. Very interesting story that happened Friday night. The mayor and the attorney general, Lisa Madigan, on stage at a press conference. Will it happen? We'll find out. Here at 720 WGN. Stay with us.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Stepping up for Steve, Justin Kaufman in studio. We're with you till 10 o'clock. Bill and Wendy come on at 10 o'clock here at 720 WGN. Steve Cochran will be back in studio tomorrow. We'll talk about his trip to New York City. Coming up at the 9 o'clock hour, Justin Roberts and the Not Ready for the Naptime Players playing at Kidzapalooza, the Lollapalooza stage. This Sunday, very excited. Justin Roberts and Liam Davis, both those guys, tremendous musicians, Grammy nominated. It's awesome that they're from Chicago and they're going to perform live coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. And then the Chicago Accent Challenge. We do this segment regularly. This is one of my favorites where you call, if you got a good Chicago accent, we'll put you to the challenge. 312-981-7200. Ask you a couple questions specific, to, sussing out your accent, and we will give you pizza if you win.
As a texter has pointed out today, you've been doing your own Chicago accent challenge.
I didn't know this, but they said that I when I say the word picture for photo, of course, I say pitcher.
Yeah, you do.
Because I just get rid of that CT. I'm more of a CH kind of guy. TCH. I'm a TCH kind of guy. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We'll be doing that coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Well, the big news that came out Friday night, right around the, as much news likes to come out right at the end of the week, was a press conference with Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan, the mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, and the police superintendent, Eddie Johnson, coming together to say they've come up with a draft agreement for federal oversight of the Chicago Police Department to help them enact the reforms that were really sort of put out and put in place by the federal government, Department of Justice, before the end of the Obama administration. On the line with us, Heather Sharon. She's the managing editor of The Daily Line Chicago. TheDailyLine.net is the website. Heather, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
Great to talk with you. Okay, so this is something we have had our eyes on for the last couple years. There was question of whether or not it would even go through thanks to a change in the Department of Justice leadership. But this was somewhat unexpected, but at the same time expected.
Right. We knew they were getting close because there was a September 1st deadline looming out there, and there had to be at least a couple of weeks to allow the public to weigh in on it. So that's where we are now. But you're right. This isn't a done deal, and there's still one major sticking point. The city does not want officers to have to document every time they use their weapon in contact with a civilian. So if an officer draws his weapon to compel any action, right now they don't have to report that to the document to the department. The Attorney General's office wants to change that, and the city has so far resisted that. And it will essentially be up to the federal judge overseeing this case to decide whether that will be part of the consent decree. So there are still a lot of things we don't know right. about this agreement, which is 232 pages. So that's what every reporter in Chicago is going to be doing in this beautiful summer week.
Heather, I'm not sure if you have the answer to this, but is there any precedent with this judge and any decision similar?
This is a new sort of era for police in Illinois. There's never been a sort of a consent decree to this magnitude in Illinois. What's interesting about that gun pointing clause is that it is in 10 of the last 12 consent decrees that have been issued across the country. And it is already in the general orders for both the New York and the Los Angeles police departments. So it's not an unprecedented, clause by any stretch of the imagination. So it'll be interesting to see sort of how that all shakes out.
So just the timeline, the history timeline, and this is interesting. So the consent the Department of Justice comes out with a report at the end of the Obama administration in 2015. So this would have been or 2016. Then Jeff Sessions and the Attorney General said, we aren't interested in doing this anymore. The mayor and many of his critics would say that the mayor then backed off. It was the Attorney General that sued the city to say, no, let's do this, even though the federal government is no longer interested. Where do we stand with that? I mean, with the Trump administration and Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, saying they're not interested, what is their role moving forward when it comes to a draft agreement for Chicago police?
They have no role whatsoever. The federal government is not a party to this case. The Department of Justice is not involved at all. And I expect that to become an issue at a court hearing scheduled for next week. The Fraternal Order of Police Lodge 7, which represents most of the rank and file officers in Chicago, want this whole, kit and caboodle tossed out because they contend it's illegal and inappropriate for Attorney General Lisa Madigan to step into the federal government role, which has traditionally sought to obtain and then enforce a consent decree.
So Ms. Madigan, she is essentially playing the role of the federal government in this case.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Huh. And if it was not for her office, we would not be at this point. Because as you said, Mayor Emanuel was in the process of negotiating a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Justice that would have imposed some level of reform on the Chicago Police Department. He, for several months, contended that would be adequate. Lisa Madigan then sued the city, and the city got on board with this consent decree negotiations, which has been going on since August of last year.
I've been trying to apply common sense to this on, what do I think is, should they have to document it or not? But it's too difficult for me to decide because it's a weapon, it's a police officer. I can't put myself in those shoes.
Yeah,
I don't
hard.
Understand. What is the argument against wanting to do it? Is it just a paperwork thing?
Correct. Superintendent Johnson and Mayor Emanuel said they were leery of imposing any sort of requirement on officers that may make them question their judgment in that sort of crucial split second when they're confronting somebody or they're in a very tense situation. The other side of the issue, I spoke with Sheila Beattie, who is an attorney who represents Black Lives Matters and several other groups that have won the right to sort of enforce this consent decree. And her point to me was, look, it should be exceedingly rare for an officer to withdraw his weapon in a confrontation situation. So we need to know how many times that's happening, and we need to know which officers are doing that. Because if you've got one officer who is, consistently and repeatedly pulling his weapon or her weapon, that officer may need additional training or may need to be flagged for assistance because they may be struggling in some way. So it's also part of the consent decree that the officers try to de-escalate situations before resorting to a use of force level. Sheila Beattie's point was that if you don't know if officers are using their weapon, it's impossible to know whether those de-escalation clauses are being enforced.
And how has the community's response gone? Because there was, as you just mentioned, you talked with the lawyer to some of the representing some of the groups, but what has their response been to the idea of this draft agreement being put out?
They're glad to see it moving forward. You know, as we talked about a little bit, it was never a done deal that we were actually going to get to this point. So it's a step in the right direction. Along with reporters, all of the lawyers are going to be scouring this agreement, in every nook and cranny, because as Sheila Beattie told me, it was Karen Sheely of the ACLU, who is also involved in this litigation, who told me the devil's really in the details. This agreement, once it's finalized, will then sort of be a roadmap over the next 5 years for what the police department can and cannot do. However, I should caution that it does not cover two really crucial issues. One, it does not impact in any way the collective bargaining agreement between the city and the police union. That expired a year ago, and negotiations have yet to really start over a new agreement. It also doesn't sort of lay out how civilian oversight should work for police misconduct and police accountability. That will be up to the city council and the mayor once they come back from their August recess September.
This will be a very important story, and Heather Sharon, the managing editor at the Daily Line, will be covering it. You can find her work at the Daily Line. .net. Heather, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it too, Justin. Take care.
She's so good. It's such a very complicated issue, and she does a good job of setting it out. And, you know, I had Kevin Graham, who was on our program a week ago. He's the head of the FOP, and he was on my show, The Download, a while back, talking about how he feels that the Department of Justice was biased in their approach to the consent decree, because he felt that because it was the Obama administration and his connection with the mayor of Chicago, that this was all a ploy for negotiations when it comes to a new contract.
Right.
And so there is a lot of cynicism about whether or not these reforms are necessary. But at the same time, you can see that when you really get down to what reform means, it's about training. And it seems that the police, the city, the attorney general, and hopefully the FOP, the union that represents, will have a hand in determining what those reforms are. But I think it is good to move forward to have some, because as we talked about at the beginning of the show, the Shachtman decree is very similar, where they were able to root out political patronage because of a federal judge's oversight. And so maybe that's the need in the case of reforming some of the issues for Chicago police.
Yeah, when parties can't come together on something, bringing in a third moderator of sorts, you know, always helps.
And this, and another really interesting, we'll leave it at this, this is the seventh try.
That's crazy.
The seventh try. So six other tries to bring reforms to the Chicago police over the years have failed. So they, and everyone says the seventh time is the charm. We'll
that's
find
charm.
Out.
It's like the Susan Lucci of police reform efforts.
Decrees. That's funny. All right. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Justin Roberts will be here. But before we do that, we've got some Chicago White Sox trivia. Give away some tickets.
And now it's time for Super Joe's White Sox trivia question. Answer Super Joe's White Sox trivia question correctly, and you can win White Sox tickets.
Are we ready?
Yeah, we're ready.
I
thought you were going to introduce me.
With Ernie's intro when it's over.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. Joe Romano, he's our guy for White Sox trivia. So 312-981-7200 is a phone number. If you answer this trivia question, you can get is it a four pack? Are we doing a four pack?
Yeah, we got another four pack.
And where are they where what game is it?
This one's against the Yankees.
Oh yes.
Yo,
now we're getting into here
up?
Come the Yankees and the Red Sox. All these teams are coming to the G rate. What do we call them? Guaranteed rate field. Anyway,
yeah.
All right, what do we got? Joe, what's the trivia for today?
All right, Jim Thome was inducted into baseball's Hall of Fame over the weekend. Thome, who started his career with Cleveland, ended up playing for six different organizations, including four seasons on the South Side. Name two of the other four teams Thome spent time
with. Ooh, I know one of those teams. All right, 312-981-7200. You can name the two teams besides the White Sox and the Indians, right? As you mentioned. What other two teams? I know one team. I just can't remember the other.
Hey, Super Joe. Justin is one of those Sox fans that's a little irritated with Thome because he didn't go in as a White Sox.
I'm irritated. I just feel that I'm not as excited about him going to the Hall of Fame. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I'm not irritated with him. He should go in as an Indian, but he's going in as an Indian, so it doesn't make me go, White Sox pride. Yes. He played well here. I loved him when he was on the team, but it was somewhat unremarkable in the fact that there are no, you know,
yeah,
playoff, all that kind of stuff. All right, let's go to John. John's got the answer. John, what's the answer? What are the two teams Jim Thome played for that weren't the Indians and the Sox?
Minnesota and Baltimore.
No.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yes? That is true?
Oh. Yeah, he played for four other teams.
Oh, four other teams.
They just had a name, too.
Oh, I thought I was...
Also waiting. The Dodgers.
Also the Dodgers,
I was waiting for the Phillies.
Man. The Phillies, yeah. Yep.
There you go. And right. Toronto.
John, you win.
No, not Toronto.
Not Toronto.
But you already won the ticket.
But you already won, so quit while you're ahead. Thanks, John. That's great. There you go. Jim Thome trivia gets some White Sox tickets here on 720 WGN. Play the Yankees. That's going to be great. All right, coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Justin Roberts. Not ready for the Naptime Players live in studio. And the Chicago Accent Challenge, 312-981-7200. If you think you got a good accent, now's the time to call. All right, stay with us.
Favorite actor, Billy. Favorite drink or Bulls. Bears, Hawks, Sox, Bulls. Play a little poker. Spend time with the wife. Take her out to Bennigan's. See if they cook chops right. Go and get a laser disc. Projection screen TV. Portillo's Italian beef. And a movie star, Tommy B. Back in the damn Buick. Cut on WCKG. Caught a song by Glenn Frey. And an interview with Dennehy. So I'm driving down Western Ave. Think I'm gonna stop at Zayers. Got a splitting freaking headache. So I popped a couple bears. So I'm back in the damn Buick. Think I need a oil check. The baddest of George Thorogood. Smoke stones on my deck. Read the sports section. Bears and their O-line. Trying to find a decent Fiero with a for sale sign. Cut on WCKG. Huey Lewis and the news. The heart of rock and roll is still beating. Do Bears. Favorite actor Denny. Favorite drink all those.
Bears, Hawks, Sox, Bulls at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In for Steve. Stepping up for Steve. Steve is back tomorrow for the Cochran Show. Coming up a little bit later in the program, Justin Roberts. Not ready for Naptime Players playing Lollapalooza on Sunday. Live in studio. But before we get there, Serengeti, the music you just heard, the song Dennehy is always the cue for our Chicago Accent Challenge. We've been doing this on the program here on WGN for a couple weeks. It's called the Chicago Accent Challenge. The Chicago accent has been made famous by superfans, but there's much more to our local dialect than Bears and Bulls. It's nuanced. And according to region, ethnicity, and gender, and I know this because of our good friend Ted McClellan and his book, How to Speak Midwestern, 312-981-7200 is our phone number. This is a simple concept, guys. We get contestants on the line. The best accent wins a Lou Malnati's pizza. But that's not all. The winner gets the opportunity to play in the Chicago Accent Challenge Tournament, which will take place later this fall on stage for the grand prize of $333. Still haven't figured out who's giving that money
to us. Who's giving that money?
Okay. I'm working on that. So if you've been told you got the best Chicago accent on the block, or you use phrases like drag it through the garden or over by there at least once a week, you have a good chance to win some stuff right now. You call up, we'll interview you, ask some questions, we'll challenge you, and have some fun stuff here. And you know what? They're already on the line. The lines are lighting up. 312-981-7200. Do you feel like you have a Chicago accent, Mary?
I don't think I do. And I feel that way because when my sister and I have been out, like, say, at a bar before I was married, and we would talk to guys, we would say we were sisters, and they would say to Katie, "Oh, you're from Chicago." And then they would look at me and they'd say, "Are you from Florida? Are you from New York? Are you from California?"
I hear it. You just say Chicago.
Chicago?
Yeah, you just threw it. You have a long... Ted, who's usually here, he's not here this morning, but he is a linguist. He will tell you that the way that a accent comes together, a Chicago accent, one of the hallmarks is that long vowel.
The long vowel.
The eh.
Chicago.
So you just said it when you said, you know, Katie's from Chicago.
I'm from Chicago, yeah. Well,
so there you go. It's there.
She does it with the coffee. She's like, "Coffee. Let's go get coffee or something."
There's all sorts of kinds. And we do two. We've done this a million different ways. And today we'll do it kind of straight ahead because we're playing until 9:30. But the there's categories. There's men. There's women. There's suburbs. There's Chicago. There's all sorts of ways you can play this. But let's just go straight ahead and get people used to it. Why don't we start right now with Big Al? Big Al, right away, that name is going to tell you that he's going to have
A good one.
A leg up here. Big Al is on the northwest side. Hey, Big. Al?
Hey, how you guys doing over there?
There it is. He's putting it on thick. Al, where are you from on the northwest side?
From Northwell, over by Superdog over there.
Okay, over there.
Over right. by there.
So when you
you know what? I got two, three cousins from Wisconsin. They make fun of me all the time for my accent.
There you go. They do. So what do they sound like in Wisconsin that's different than you in Chicago?
They sound a little Swedish, if you know what it, you know, a little Heider Hoder kind of stuff.
That's right. All right, so I'll ask you a couple of easy questions, and we'll kind of suss it out. We can already hear the accent you're putting it on today. So I'll start. My first question in the Chicago Accent Challenge, as it is every time, is: welcome to Portillo's. May I take your order?
I'd like two sausages and the beef.
Okay. All right, Big Al.
That's a lot of meat right there.
Gotta add the meat.
All right, then I'll ask you one more question. How do you get over by Maz?
Get over by Maz. Usually, I walk over by Maz because she's real close. She's right down the street.
All right, there you go. And what is the name of the space between the two houses in Chicago? The space that separates the two houses. What do you call that?
The gangway.
There it is. All right, Big Al comes through. Thanks, Big Al. We appreciate that.
Good work.
I grew up in the suburbs, and that gangway thing, I didn't learn that until I started.
I had no clue what.
You didn't know that either, Mary?
No, it's alleys. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I say alleys too, but
alleys.
People get alleys. Mary, last time Ted was here, he was like, he
was
perked up.
Fun of me.
No, he perked up in the studio because he heard your voice and he said, that's a Chicago accent.
Yeah.
Now, the gangway is the space between the two houses, not the alley.
Yeah, the alley is the back.
There's your house, and then there's that walkway between the two houses.
Yeah, but we just don't have gangways.
I probably also called it a side yard or something. I definitely never heard gangway until I was an adult and working.
That's the idea, right? Yeah. All right, so Big Al, here's what I would say about Big Al. This happens all the time on the Chicago Accent Challenge. He puts it on. So it's hard to say if Big Al, is truly talking like that every single day, or if he is doing a sketch from Saturday Night Live. It's hard to tell when you call in right away and you're like, and you go right for the sausages and the over by dares and all that kind of and the beat. I mean, right when he answered the phone, he's like, I'm ready to go. I'm from, you know, like everything he said was essentially what he thinks we want to hear.
But if you're that good at executing it, you must be doing it in your daily life. That's what I feel about Big Al.
Let's go to Glenn. Glenn, you're from Evanston. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, how you guys doing over there?
All right, Glenn, you're from Evanston. What parish did you grow up in?
I grew up right over by, what's the place over there? Bolingbrook.
Okay, by Bolingbrook. All right, that's a Bolingbrook to Evanston. All right, and how do you get over by Maz?
I go a couple, two, 3 miles, you know, on the Dan Ryan. Boom, I'm right there.
Okay, there you go. Let me ask you a Chicago question. What do the girls say when Eagle Man lays the egg?
Oh, look at those low rates.
Oh, there you go.
See, he's got it. Glenn's got it. That's good, Glenn. Good job. So he's got the trivia down for Chicago. And I'll ask you the same question I asked Big Al. Welcome to Portillo's. May I take your order?
Let me get a couple of Franks. Dragging through the garden.
Okay.
No ketchup.
Okay. There you go. All right. Thanks, Glenn. Good job.
Great.
All right. We'll see.
Dragging through the garden, that must mean with all the vegetables on it.
Drag it through the garden means, everything.
Everything.
That's what they say about a Chicago hot dog.
I always just say, give it to me with everything.
Did you guys happen to see this report? Like, I think it was last week where it said the Chicago accent is the worst accent in the country.
I know, right? That's what kind of...
The least attractive in the country.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I disagree with
that. But I wish Ted were here. Ted's on tour. But I wanted to ask him about that because the Chicago accent is one that borrows very distinctly from Buffalo, from northern New York, in that area, east Lake Erie. That's where the accent comes from. So for them to make an article about the Chicago accent being the worst in the country, you would have to indict 4, 5, 6 different states in doing that.
What about Buffalo? Not that great of an accent.
We have a texter, Pat the firefighter. He said he was born and raised in Chicago. Took a lot of hard work to stop that accent and sounding like an idiot. So he's basically saying it's a...
I think people misinterpret the idea sometime with the Chicago Accent Challenge. It's out of ultimate respect, the Chicago accent. I have a Chicago accent. I know I do. We talked about this a little bit earlier. The pitcher and the pitcher. I just said pitcher twice. But this concept of overdoing it, this idea that the Chris Farley and the Robert Smigel and the George Wendt sketch on Saturday Night Live, that was for comedic effect. And you've heard both Big Al and Glenn bring that kind of thing to it because that's what they are looking. They're doing it bigger than they're almost making it a parody.
Sure.
But what I love about the segment, there's people lined up that you'll get to a certain point where, you know, it's more about you grew up here. I think the woman who won, I think it was Cynthia, won last time. It was just the little things like how she said Higgins Avenue. You know, she used the U and the A, and that's what grabbed our attention, but she wasn't trying to do something different. So, or trying to make it bigger than it should be. So that's,
I know Steve Grzanich has the Southern Illinois accent.
Well, sometimes I fall into it. There's certain words I can't say, so I, you know, if I do say them, then I slip right back into the hillbilly accent, but...
He's a Yahoo is the one that always comes to mind.
Yahoo, yeah. Can't say jail sale.
Yeah.
Can't say that.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. Get on the line. We'll take our break here. There's room, and the pizza, Lou Malnati's Pizza, is still up for grabs. 312-981-7200. I'm not necessarily sold on Big Al or Glenn because of the fact that they did it big. I want a more diversity as we move forward. I want an authentic
Chicago
experience.
Accent.
312-981-7200. We're playing not only for a pizza, but a chance to enter into the grand prize for $333.
85 Walter Ruse, old style pack of crews. Go to Ace, no tolls, and weed whacker fuel. 85 Bear Super, Stacy Adams got ruined. For the
720 WGN, we're playing for pizza. Chicago Accent Challenge. If you got a great Chicago accent, call us right now. 312-981-7200. We'll ask you a couple questions. We'll give you a challenge. See if you've got the best Chicago accent. The line's lit up right now. Let's go to Joanne, who's in Park Ridge. Joanne, welcome to the show.
Hello.
How you
Thank
doing?
You.
Thanks for calling.
Listen, it looks like people are doing more of the Italian accent rather than the Chicago accent.
See, there you go. You know the distinction, right? When you,
I am Italian, but and raised by a Chicago policeman, lived in Chicago, and I remember the gangways, and I remember the old neighborhood before they even built the college there. So,
oh, yeah, I see.
You know,
was that
yeah.
where you grew up? Is you grew up in Park Ridge?
On Taylor and Peoria. Oh, no, I moved to Park Ridge later.
Taylor and Peoria?
Way later.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I moved to Park Ridge just to bring the kids up and not go to Catholic school because I had to do that. And I didn't want them to go to Catholic
I hear you. Someone who went to Catholic school.
There you
That's
go.
Nice oh,
you
God, yes.
Yeah.
And college. Catholic, yeah. Catholic, you know.
All right, Joanne, if you were going to go back to the old neighborhood of Taylor and Peoria from Park Ridge, how would you get there?
Oh, I couldn't tell you that because I was 7 when I left. But I can tell you how to get to Mom.
How do you get to Ma's?
I go east on Milwaukee Avenue and then south on Howard and then east on Octavia, and I'm there.
All right, there you go.
Okay.
Go ahead, and I'll ask you, I'll give you another couple questions here.
Okay.
All right, you ready?
Yes.
Welcome to Portillo's. May I take your order?
I'd like beef with extra peppers. And a Diet Coke. I mean, I'm not going to give you the heavy Italian accent. I'm just going to give you who I am.
I love it. I love it.
She's not going to load up on meat either. How many can you really eat?
Right.
I know.
Right. Okay. So, what is on a Chicago hot dog, Joanne? Do you know?
Well, I call it pickle-lily. So I don't know if they put pickle-lily. Yeah, they do. They put pickle-lily. Onions, tomatoes. I think that's it.
Well, that
oh, maybe hot peppers if you want it.
Yeah,
and then sometimes they roll up the fries. Sometimes they put it on the side.
There it is.
Joanne, I love it.
That's great. Thank you. Great job.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye bye.
Bye. There
Joanne
you go. Joanne
gets my vote.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Now rolling I want pickle-lily. That's relish, right?
Yeah, that's
I
the green
that
relish,
stuff.
Right? Let's keep going. Let's bust through all these guys. We'll go rapid fire. Don's in Oswego. Is it Oswego or Oswego? Sorry, buddy.
Oswego.
Oswego. Are you from Oswego?
No, I'm actually. I grew up until I was 8 on the south side of Chicago. Right on Union Street, next to the Nativity of Our Lord. I was baptized there.
This is a good one. Don, you are a classic Chicago. I already tell
I like Don and Joanne. Joanne moved out of the city when she was 7, and Don moved out when they were 8, and they both referred to growing up. So they became mature adults at 7 and 8 and headed out to the burbs. I like it.
Well, it was necessity based upon the family size. We kept growing.
Kept growing.
Sure. And I am a Catholic boy, too, so I know Joanne's feelings. So all through. Actually, at one point, lived right across the street from Mayor Daley.
Oh, wow.
On Low Street.
Yeah, right.
And,
33rd and Low, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so
35th and low.
Okay. I'll start you off with a 16-inch softball question. What's the name of the ball that's used in
Blitzer?
Yeah, that was easy for you. How about Celozzi, Edelson, Chevrolet, and Elmhurst at York and Roosevelt Roads? Where?
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
I got to do it more like
Celozzi.
That. Celozzi, Edelson, Chevrolet, and Elmhurst at York and Roosevelt Roads. Where are you?
Always
save more money.
There it is. There it is. And I'll ask you one question, Don. How do you get over by Maz?
Well, as of right now, I would take 88 into the Eisenhower to Dan Ryan. Dan Ryan, get off at 35th, right by Sox Park. Go west to Halsted south, and then jaunt my way over to 37th and Union.
There it is.
I have to get a bunch of one-way streets there, like Demerol.
Yeah, right. I love it. Don, thank you. That was great. No, Don's good. I like Don. Joanne was good, too, but I like Don. Let's wrap it up. Let's do Mary. We'll do one more. We'll get the rest of the guys. Mary, welcome to Chicago Accent Challenge. Where are you from?
Hey there. I'm from the western suburbs.
Okay, so you're in Warrenville. Are you from Chicago, or you grew up in Warrenville?
Grew up in Westchester.
Oh, in Westchester. That's very Chicago, yeah. Do people tell you have a Chicago accent?
All the time. I went and ordered a glass of pop in Vegas, and they said, oh, you're from Chicago.
Right there, because it's a glass of pop. So that's how you know.
I like your accent a lot. Welcome to Portillo's. May I take your order?
Hey, I'd like a beef with sweet and hot dip.
Yeah.
And give me one baptized. And, you know, I was making Sunday gravy, and I forgot. I didn't have time to go get the meat, so I sent my husband over by Jewel. And I said, you know, go get some beef and some peppers. And, you know, I need some more tomatoes and onions. And, you know, get some Diet Pop, because we're out of Diet Pop.
Diet Pop.
And, all right. And, you know, the kids are all coming over, so, you know, we've got to have the gravy on for hours.
Mary, wonderful job. Thank you very much. She was great. That's a tough call. You know, as Steve Grzanich put his vote in for Joanne.
Well, yeah, he's voting for all
Mary
food.
And Don,
yeah.
I know.
This is a tough one.
So it's Joanne from Park Ridge, it's Don from Oswego, and Mary from Warrenville. And Mary had the most Chicago of the three, I think, in terms of all the catchphrases. There's a lot of over-by dares.
And I like that she's from the burbs.
And she's from the burbs. Joanne, who grew up in the UIC area, which is gone now, Taylor and Peoria, but now lives in Park Ridge, was pretty strong. And then Don from Oswego, I really liked him, too, because he brought you that more thin Chicago accent. You know, like thin crust and deep dish. The first cut, Big Al and Glenn, they were deep dish.
Yeah.
Don was a more thin crust. How about this, guys? Can we give two? Is that cool, Joe? Can we give two? Yeah, he's cool with it. So why don't we do this? Why don't we give the pizzas, the Lou Malnati's pizzas, to Joanne from Park Ridge?
Okay.
And then why don't we give one to Don from Oswego and give a runner-up to Mary just to say that she can try again. But I think right now Joanne and Don take the cake. What do you guys think?
I think that works for me.
I feel terrible. The line's lit up, too, and I would do this for 3 hours, you guys. I'm sure Bill and Wendy would let us continue the Chicago accent challenge, but we got to move on.
I think Wendy has a good Chicago accent also.
Yeah, we can ask her a couple of these questions.
And we've got to stop this. Steve Grzanich, I think you would agree. We've been talking about food around 9:30 every morning.
is that right?
Right near the end of the show, and now all I want is pizza, beef, a hot dog.
Because this is lunchtime for us.
Yeah, that's true. So we've been working. So congrats to Joanne and Don for winning this week's Chicago Accent Challenge. We'll be right back. Coming up, Justin Roberts and the Route Ready for Naptime Players live in studio. So stay with us.
Well, this is definitely Wacker Drive. If my estimations are correct, we should be very close to...
Steve Cochran on 720 WGN.
720 WGN and on CLTV. It's the Cochran Show. Justin Kaufman stepping up for Steve. He's back tomorrow from his trip to New York. Mary Sandberg is here. Dave Ennett, Mary Vandevelle, Steve Grzanich. And in studio right now, Justin Roberts. Justin Roberts, a Grammy-nominated singer and songwriter. His group, the Not Ready for Naptime Players, has been a staple here in Chicago at so many different venues and festivals, and he is a tremendous asset. He and Liam Davis are in studio right now. It's amazing to have them back here at WGN. They're going to perform live for us. Here they are with the song Henrietta's Hair. Justin Roberts, Liam Davis, take it away.
You'd know if you had her, you hadn't met her. She had the world's longest hair. Hated having it brushed or cut or combed or curled or even touched. One day her mom just left it there. Henrietta's hair started off really small, you know, a ladybug, that's all. Found its way up to her hair. He said, I don't know if it's all right, but I'd like to crash here for the night. That is, if you have room to spare. I don't need a better chair. And it sent her, if you dare, into Henrietta's hair. It's mangled in a mess, but I like to think it's blessed. And there's room enough to share up in Henrietta's hair. Whatever else on earth could it be there for? Well, the word soon got around, and all these creatures on the ground started making their way up to her hair. There were creepy, crawly things, some birds with colored wings. It was not an invitation, only kind of affair. In Henrietta's hair. Then it started getting a little crowded up there in Henrietta's hair. Several of the residents wanted more than their fair share. Than this mosquito in a nest said, I hate to be a pest, but let's not forget to write our moms lots of letters, and that we're merely guests. And it sent her, if you dare, into Henrietta's hair. It's tattered and it's torn, but into this life we're born, and there's room enough to share up Henrietta's hair. Whatever else on earth could it be there for? And then Henrietta said, come one, come all, it doesn't matter if you're short or fat or tall or skinny or slimy or just stuck out on the road. Doesn't matter who you know or what you do, everybody has the right to be tangled up in blue in this heavenly and horrific hairdo. Well, just don't forget to wear your shoes, and it's enter if you dare into Henrietta's hair. It's tangled and it's twirled, but it's beloved by the whole world, and there's room enough to share up in Henrietta's hair. Whatever else on earth could it be there for?
Yeah. There you go.
Thank you.
Tremendous. As always, Justin Roberts, Not Ready for the Naptime Players, Liam Davis and Justin Roberts both here. The album is Lemonade. It came out earlier this year, and it was nominated for a Grammy. And, of course, Justin Roberts is here because he's playing Lollapalooza at the Kids Stage coming up on Sunday. He's also got, I think, Saturday the 26th. He's going to do the Space Street Festival in Evanston.
Sunday
the 26th at noon. Justin, Liam, good to see you guys.
Yeah, great to be here. Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Amazing. Thank Henrietta's hair.
I have to ask you, who had the album Lemonade first, you or Beyonce?
Beyonce did, but I had already planned to name my record Lemonade when I got the unfortunate tweet.
that Beyonce was releasing the record. And then I just decided to keep the same name because I thought it would be funny.
That is funny.
As I was at the Grammys, I ran into the engineer of Beyonce's Lemonade. And I said, oh, I made a record called Lemonade. Which was pretty funny.
Yes, we're able to bond over that, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Lollapalooza, not your first Lollapalooza, but it's been many years, right?
Liam and I were trying to figure it out. We think it's been at least 10 years since we were there last. It'll be great to be back. It's quite an event
for you to. I mean, Henrietta's Hair is a staple for you, and it's also a song that's probably 10 years old in this case.
Yep. Just about.
But what does it mean to go back to be able to play this festival again to bring your music back to Lollapalooza?
I love it because I know a lot of the families that come and see us regularly just are really excited about bringing their kids to Lollapalooza and getting to experience the kids' stage, but also other bands that they want to see with their kids at Lollapalooza. And I think it's great that they make a space for that at an event like that, so people can bring families.
I think it's also a testament to the genre of music. The kids' music has changed dramatically in the last, since the last time you guys played Lollapalooza.
Right.
But you're seeing more and more interest in a more distinct and more nuanced type of kids song, because it used to be, you know, everyone thinks of kids music as Barney or anything of that nature, and you're seeing now much more of a shift into almost a rock and roll or an alt rock or just a way to give kids an experience that isn't just that dumbed down kind of variety that we used to have in this country.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of the bands that might normally just play Lollapalooza have made kids records, and then there's folks like Liam and I have been doing it for 20 years, but trying to make music that adults will appreciate as much as kids.
Well, I think it goes along with the whole transition from when dads weren't involved to now parents are, you know, it used to be that parents made decisions and kids weren't consulted. And now we're in this era where kids are consulted on everything and parents go along to everything. And so we needed better, more clever movies.
Right, that's
you know,
true.
And then music also had to come along with that. And like you said, Henrietta's Hair is 10 years old. So a fan of theirs who at 4 was like, yeah, I'm not brushing my hair. I'm going to keep doing this. And now that person's 14. They're like, oh, remember that time I wasn't into brushing my hair and the bugs lived in my hair?
That is a tremendous point that you guys have been around now. I mean, Justin, you've been doing both of you together, as you just mentioned. I mean, 20 years or so. Are you getting to the point where kids who are fans of your music are now in their 20s?
Yeah,
maybe
absolutely.
Coming to the stage and saying, I remember you guys.
Yeah, for some reason, this past year, when we've been traveling, we've seen a lot more families with teenagers coming to our shows, and they're like reliving their childhood and like just enjoying the fact that they grew up with the music.
Yeah, 15 or 16.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
and just,
been interesting.
I mean, just the other day, we had a librarian come up to us, and she said that her daughter had seen us in 2001, and she's now 19 years old, and she remembers, you know, listening to Willie Was a Whale back then and was hoping to come to the show.
As you're Grammy nominated for Lemonade, and it was such a big album for you guys, as you think about how your music progresses, do you think about changing it up? Do you always try, as songwriters and musicians who have worked together for over 20 years, do you think about how to push the envelope, how to push the genre into different places?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, Lemonade was kind of a reaction to the last several records we've made, which have been giant power pop wall of sound kind of records, and I was like, let's try to make something simple again like we did when we first started and record mostly live in the studio and just see what happens. And it was super fun, but now I'm finding as I'm writing stuff for a new record, I'm starting to kind of return to making elaborate rock music and hopefully make another one of those. But I'll probably make a record of lullabies now that I'm saying that. So like, it's whatever I want to do, it's the opposite.
You've given yourself that freedom.
Have you guys adapted a song now, like when you listen to current music, they'll make references to text me up, hit me up? Do you have like a I'm going to watch my mom's phone in the stroller, like, you know, like, to make a current reference, you know?
I haven't, because that stuff scares me so much. I'm not going to mention any modern technology, only things that were popular when I was 4 years old, which was a long time ago.
Well, it is interesting to think about how you approach the music. And I ask this of bands that are playing Lollapalooza or outside festivals all the time. You know, do you change the way you do a set because of the environment to play? Like if someone is usually playing Metro and they're going to Lollapalooza, they have to change the way. For you guys, it's nuanced in that way that you play a lot of your stuff outside, and you're also playing to audiences that could be a little bit more, what's the best way to say, passive.
Passive.
Yeah, in the way that they're sitting down, or maybe kids who are enjoying it but not enjoying it like music lovers enjoy, where they're jumping up and down like at a Lollapalooza, the main stage. How do you approach a show like this, knowing what you know about playing outside?
Yeah, I think it's different. You know, you can't expect the kind of engagement you get in a theater setting where people are, you know, sitting in dimmed lights ready to watch a concert. So I think what we do is just, you know, try to have as much fun as we have on stage, invite people to be a part of the show, you know, in terms of the interactive things that we do, but don't expect the entire audience to do everything like they might in a theater setting.
Right.
But it can be kind of, I mean, it's fun sometimes when that happens because it gives us a little more freedom to just play music live. Like there a regular band instead of constantly interacting with the audience.
Right. Well, this Sunday at the Kids Stage at Lollapalooza, Justin Robertson, Not Ready for Naptime Players. Also Sunday the 26th, August 26th at noon at the Space Street Festival in Evanston.
Yep.
The great space.
Yeah.
It's great space.
See what you did there.
Yeah. But Lollapalooza, that's great to be at the Kids Stage. Justin Robertson, Not Ready for Naptime Players, the album Lemonade, Grammy nominated. They're live in studio. What are we going to hear for the out here?
We're going to do a song called My Brother Did It.
My Brother Did It.
Yeah.
Justin Roberts, Liam Davis in studio. Take it away, guys.
Mama wants to know who spilled the milk and who left the cereal box out. Whoa. And Mama wants to know about that train track route that runs up and down the stairs all around the house. Well, I stand here all the while, full-grown kid on trial, and I would be the first one to admit it. My brother did it, he did it, he did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, he did it, he did it, did it, did it. Well, it couldn't have been me, cause my heart just wasn't in it. No, he did it, he did it, he did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it. And Mama wants to know who ate that chocolate cake right out of the fridge, didn't leave a little smidge. Daddy wants to know, color crayons on the wall, isn't that a shame? Sign my sister's name. Well, I wasn't there at the time, far from the scene of the crime, and I would be the first one to admit it. My brother did it, he did it, he did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, he did it, he did it, did it, did it. Well, it couldn't happen me, cause my heart just wasn't in it. No, he did it, he did it, he did it, did it, did it, did it. My brother was old enough to talk about it. My brother was old enough to walk, but I doubt it. Then he could tell you about the wild and wonderful things that are going on when you're gone, when you're gone, and when you return after just 1 minute to find out who made us laugh when he burped into his glass. I'll admit it, my brother did it, he did it, he did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, he did it, he did it, did it, did it, it. Well, it couldn't happen me, cause my heart just wasn't in it. My brother did it, he did it, he did it, did it, did it, did it, did it.
Yeah, there we go. Justin Roberts and Liam Davis in studio. Justin Roberts and Not Ready for Naptime Players will be at Lollapalooza on Sunday at the Kids Stage. Also going to be at the Space Street Festival in Evanston on Sunday, August 26th at noon. The album Lemonade, the latest. Always a pleasure to have you guys in studio. You guys are great.
And great to be here.
Thanks
likewise,
so much.
Yeah. It's a blast.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
All right, in studio time for Bill and Wendy coming up here on 720 WGN. Hey, guys, how's it going?
How are you? Everything good?
Yeah, everything's good.
What's going on in Chicago?
There was a lot of questions. Mary had said Wendy should play the Chicago accent.
I know. Thanks for throwing me under the bus.
I know.
I'll ask you a couple questions if you want the
go
question.
Go ahead. Okay. When Wendy walked in, I said, do you think you have a Chicago accent? And she said, no, but everybody that listens to me says that.
Yeah, everybody says that.
Okay, I'll ask you, how do you get over by Ma's?
I walk over to my mom's house because she lives so close.
All right,
but isn't the key to that giving directions?
Yeah.
You want to be specific.
I don't get that.
Yeah, you want to be specific because then they'll go, well, I got to go down Tui to get over to Higgins.
Or mention, you know where Arby's is? You take a left at Arby's. When you get to Baskin Robbins, you take a right.
I grew up in Brookfield. It wasn't that big. You didn't have to walk very far, and you only had Cock Robin as a landmark.
Okay, what about Welcome to Portillo's? May I take your order?
A wet beef with peppers on the side.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That works.
I can feel it. You would have won on Lou Malnati's today.
I'll take it anyway.
It's like, what's on the show today?
We're going to talk about Bigfoot porn.
Yeah, okay.
Well, that's Bill's choice. I just want that to be known.
The people want to hear about it, and I'm not afraid to give it to them.
So the idea of people looking at streams, trying to
There's
like,
a noted
streams.
Politician who's in trouble because he had a propensity to enjoy Bigfoot porn. I didn't know it existed until an hour ago.
That's not what I thought
Bigfoot
that meant.
Bigfoot or the Bigfoot porn you
I
didn't
knew
know
that
existed.
Bigfoot existed. I didn't know that.
I thought you meant like almost Jay Cutler on the new reality show. He watches live streams deer. That's his thing.
Does he really?
Yeah, I just
God,
thought that that's
a deer feed.
Yeah, I thought that Bigfoot
was he
porn
doing
meant,
that during bears practices? Probably.
That's what.
So you thought it?
I
was.
I thought it was some people who are really into watching live stream, hoping to catch Bigfoot.
No.
But you're saying this is literally a fetish of
yes,
sorts.
Yes, right, and he's a politician.
All right,
or was.
Well, Sal, okay.
He gets my vote.
I'm going to have to listen to this. Yeah. All right, take it away, guys.